Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, October 29th, 2016. This is episode 1335. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. or Canada. Outside that area, you can always Skype, because it shouldn't cost you anything to a toll free number. 8888 Ask Leo. What a week, huh? What a week. Apple quarterly earnings on Tuesday. Microsoft announces its first desktop PC on Wednesday. On Thursday, Apple announces three new laptop computers. It's been crazy. Also crazy expensive because, well, I had to buy a few things. I do it so you don't have to. In fact, you probably should wait and see till you hear all the reviews. Let's start with Microsoft, because I think of the two, Microsoft's might be the more interesting. What? Who'd have thunk that? Microsoft took the Wednesday occasion to announce the name of its next version of Windows. Free version, by the way. And that's kind of keeping their promise to everybody that if you upgraded to Windows 10, that'd be it. You'd own Windows for life, or the life of that machine anyway. And all the upgrades to it would continue twice a year for free forever. I think they said that. I don't know if anybody believed it, but so far, so good. The next version will be out March, we think. Spring, they said. But I think March is actually, maybe end of March, but March is actually the accurate date. Because, and we know that because they leaked out the code number, which is 1703. And Microsoft's code numbers corresponded to year and month, 1703. So March 17, next year. It'll be the Creative Edition, which was kind of a shock to me. Microsoft, it felt like over the last few, I guess, years now, has been doubling down on enterprise, on business, on the cloud, and kind of backing off on home. I think Windows 8 was the last time they really said, you know, Microsoft Windows for home. Remember the ads to the cloud and all of that. But creative is really, maybe not even home, actually, maybe really aimed at creative professionals. And that's where this ties in with Apple's announcement, because traditionally, creatives, and that includes, of course, photographers, movie makers, artists, graphic designers, and writers have gravitated towards the Mac platform. Just more for cultural reasons, I think, than anything else. In fact, if you were at the Microsoft event, you might have noticed all the bloggers and writers all were sitting there with glowing little apples on their lap, not Microsoft products. But Microsoft doesn't, I guess, has decided that since Apple seems to be ignoring creatives of late, they haven't really updated their high-end Macs in a while. This is the first update in a year and a half for the MacBook Pro, and they haven't updated the Mac Pro. That, remember that crazy black tube? They haven't updated that in 3 years. So Microsoft, I think said, well, hey kids, if we're going to make a desktop PC, let's make it for the creatives, and let's call the next version of Windows the Creative version, Creative Edition. And actually, I'm very intrigued by the Studio, Surface Studio that Microsoft announced, a 28-inch all-in-one desktop. Now, that by itself isn't particularly innovative. We've seen all-in-ones, well, starting with Apple 10 years ago. Remember the one that looked like a lamp? That was 10 years ago. With the articulating arm and the screen that would stay where you wanted it. And then, you know, Microsoft announces kind of the same thing. Yeah, but kind of different. So 28 inches, very high resolution screen with two color profiles built in. This is something photographers and graphic designers look for. Designed for the full range of colors, the P3 gamut, they call it. That's the color space. And then the kind of standard one that photographers use, sRGB, and the ability to switch back and forth between them. So this is a really gorgeous display. And unlike any Apple product, Apple Macintosh product, it's touch. It also does something unusual. It's hinged. It's a, you know, hinged single screen. All-in-one means everything's in the, you know, the computer itself. The monitor is part of the computer. But the hinging allows it to lie flat like a drafting table at a 20-degree angle. So you could actually kind of lean over it, hunch over it like as you would in the old days with a pen, protractor, pencil, T-square, and use it as a drafting table or a drawing table. They announced also that it's going to have a stylus, so you can draw on it, directly on it. Creative Professional has been paying a lot of money for a product called Cintiq from Wacom that allowed them to do that with a regular PC or Mac. Now they can do it directly on the PC. And a little knob, a dial, that was kind of odd. We saw this 10 years ago also on, they called it the PowerMate for the Macintosh. It's a third-party product from a company called Griffin. But this one's kind of neat. You put it on the screen, and the screen senses it, and it responds to it. This is inspired by the Surface Table that Microsoft made some years ago. Microsoft's kind of doubling down on the fact that they have touch in their operating system, and Apple does not. And it makes a lot of sense to really go all in on it. So I was very impressed. Now, this is not an everyday PC. You can get a PC. Some wag said, for the cost of the tax on a new MacBook Pro, you can get a PC, a few hundred bucks. This is a $3,000, starts at $3,000 PC. But creative professionals are less price sensitive than you and me because they use it to make money. It's a business cost, and they use it for their business. They're willing to spend that kind of money. Very interesting. Then Apple comes back the next day and it kind of recognizes the fact that they, back to the days of Steve Jobs, decided, nah, we're not going to put touch into the Macintosh operating system. You know, they have all sorts of excuses. They call it gorilla arms, people reaching their arms out to their screen and say, nobody wants that. Well, I think Windows has proved otherwise. So has the Chromebook. I think people do want touch, but Apple says, no, you don't want touch. But what we are going to do, well, the concession to touch, we're going to put this second screen on our laptops where the function keys used to be. And this second screen with its second operating system, turns out it's based on the watchOS, the second screen will be programmable and can have buttons that are associated with the application you're using. You can scrub through video if you're using a movie. You can use touch controls to modify a photo if you're working in Photoshop, things like that. Pretty cool. There are some limitations to these laptops. While they are designed, they have, you know, these new USB 3 Type-C connectors, and so designed they could drive with one of these huge 5K screens, which Apple does not make. They mentioned that they've partnered with LG, the TV company, to make these screens. You could plug it in, but there'd be a problem there because they top out at 16 gigs of RAM, which for creative professionals is probably, you know, right on the edge of too little. A number of creative professionals looking at Apple and then looking at Microsoft and saying for the first time, I'm thinking about buying a Windows machine. Maybe that's what I should get. So a very interesting week, and expensive for me because, of course, I had to snap up everything I saw. But I do it for you, you understand. All right, I'll confess. The main reason I became the tech guy, the main reason almost, well, 30 years ago I decided I should cover this is so I could have, you know, I could play with all the new stuff. And I guess there's a price tag associated with that. I will have those for review. The Microsoft Surface, Creative Surface, isn't coming out until December 15th. be an early Christmas present or Hanukkah present. The laptops from Apple coming out in a couple of weeks, and I will certainly talk about those. We'll talk about anything on your mind. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to go to the phones right after this. So I bought both the Surface Studio.
Yeah.
I bought both the – so it's the Creative Edition of Windows and the Surface Studio. I bought the Surface Studio. I bought the bottom-of-the-line one for that. And then I also – we also got, what, a 13 for Lisa, 13-inch MacBook Pro for Lisa, and a 15 with a touch bar, and a 15 with a touch bar.
I talked to them yesterday.
If they can't change it, that's
all
right.
They can. But they would have had to cancel it and make a new order.
No, I don't want to delay it. That's fine.
So I said, yeah, let's
that's fine.
Cancel.
Thank you. Smart. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I had no idea it would cost so much more for, what is it, 2 terabyte?
Wasn't the top option 1 terabyte before? I don't know. Is that
it might have been, yeah. 2 terabytes is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, especially since with 16 gigs of RAM, if you're going to do anything really serious,
when
you're going
to
dock
that
it.
Down to, like, Jerry? Or somebody who
they'll be very video, happy. They'll be very happy.
Be happy to have that
capacity.
Yeah.
Hey, it's just money. Who needs it? Then Ozzy needed surgery, so that's another. Oh, my gosh. Poor Ozzy. He hurt his back. He had to have back surgery. He had a swollen disc. Yeah. You know, he's so little, and he jumps up on everything and down on everything, and I think it just took its toll. He's 9 years old. And just So, Mike B., you got it, huh? Yeah, I mean, there's the good news is I hadn't bought a MacBook Pro in some time. I'm using a 2012 MacBook Pro in the set on studio. $113 for Lisa and $115 for me, and I got the space gray for me and the silver for Lisa. So, well, what happened? The way we do that is, she needed an update too. But what we do is, I'll review both, and then she'll get the $13. I'll probably keep the $15. It looks pretty nice. It is. They're all Skylake. They didn't do Kaby Lake. And I think that's probably the right thing to do. They're all Skylake. The back surgery, yeah, you don't even want to know. No, it's just KB's not ready, right? It was too new for both companies, and it's, you know, not necessarily a huge advantage to either. You get the big thing you get with Skylake is Thunderbolt 3. It's not particularly more power friendly or more powerful. It's Thunderbolt 3, which both machines have. You know, I bet it'd be a nice Linux machine, Battlecam. Yeah, it's stunning, Mike. Both Russell and Patrick Delahanty, who are our resident professionals, said, what, 16 gigs? 16 gigs is a lot. But if you're using Photoshop or Lightroom, you sure would like 32 gigs. Well, what I put on this Linux machine was a Xeon, not a i7. And that's very fast. Well, you multiply by 7, so Ozzy's my age, roughly. But I don't jump up and down a lot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is there a special occasion coming up, Heather Hammond, in the next couple of days? I see horns.
You think?
Yeah.
I love Halloween.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I'm not wearing a costume today, though. I feel bad about that.
You're the tech guy.
Should I have? Yeah, that's my costume. I'm the tech. I go as myself each year.
Yeah, that's one thing. I'm sure someone's going as you, so, you know, it's a
thing. What would you'd have glasses with tape on them and a pocket protector and you'd snort a lot? Yeah. Is that how you be the tech guy? Is that how you do that?
One could. I don't see it that way.
No. Heather is the phone ranger. That means she's taking your calls, answering the phones, and I see you've lined up a bunch of great people at 8888-ASK-LEO. And as usual, because you are the phone ranger, I give you the choice of our first call.
Full license. Justin, south of us in Oxnard, California, has a question.
Nice. And I love the horns. Those are great. I bet you have a more elaborate costume planned, though, don't you? Yeah. For later?
Yes.
Not for here.
Monday.
Not for work.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Justin, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I love your show.
Thank you, Justin.
I have a question.
Sure.
I was thinking of switching from Mac to Windows because I saw the prices of the new MacBook Pros.
What did I just say? Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like $1,500 starting.
And, you know, it's kind of funny because in the phone world, I wish I could have Apple's hardware with Google's software. And now in the desktop world, I'm thinking I want Microsoft's hardware with the, but I like Mac OS a little better than I like Windows. And so we're stuck in both cases with, you know, kind of an imperfect choice, I guess. Yeah. What do you use your computer for?
For like programming, like browsing the web.
You obviously, there's nothing you can't do on Windows that you could do on the Macintosh. But I have to say, programmers generally prefer the Macintosh because it has basically Unix under the hood. And so you can you go to the command line and you're not getting a DOS prompt as you would on Windows. You're getting the Bash shell, and it's real. It's not Windows now has the Bash shell through Ubuntu, but it's kind of not really it's a shell on top of the Windows kernel. In Macintosh's case, it's the shell on top of the mock kernel. It's a Unix kernel. So if I want to write in Python, Apple comes with it. If I want to write in Perl, Apple comes with it. If I want to write in Ruby, Apple comes with it. And I can easily upgrade it. There are porting solutions like Homebrew and Mac ports that allow me to run any Unix software. I run Emacs in a Mac terminal all the time. Mm-hmm. A little harder to do. You can do it, again, on Windows, but a little harder to do it. So programmers, I think generally, because of that, favor Macintosh. But, you know, programmers are a little upset with this OLED replacement for the function keys because the function key is where the escape key is.
Yeah.
And if you, for instance, if you are a programmer and use Vim or VI for your editor, you need the escape key all the time. Now, the good news is it can be programmed to have that escape key there. In fact, there's nothing that couldn't keep you from having VI keys on the function key. You could write that. But I feel like it's tough. So what do you develop? Software for the web or mobile?
Well, I'm a college student, and I'm just starting.
You're learning to code, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. If you're a college student, you often want to see what your coding classes recommend and what they use. You don't want to be the one guy sitting there with a Windows machine.
You usually use
Mac.
Visual Studio.
Oh, then go for if you're studying Visual Studio. In other words, you're learning .NET programming. Or you're learning C# programming, Microsoft-specific languages, obviously that's the better way to go. Visual Studio is amazing. Apple has its own version, in effect, called Xcode. Xcode comes with the Mac. It's free. You have to buy the full version of Visual Studio, but they have student editions and free editions.
Yeah.
I think it depends. So that's that. Then get a Windows machine.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I have a problem, though. Because I have a 4 terabyte external hard drive, but it's formatted for Mac.
So what you're going to have to do, yeah, and that means there's two ways to do this. And this is kind of a weird situation, which is incompatible file systems. One doesn't even think about file systems usually. But Windows uses something called NTFS, the new technology, or NT file system. Apple uses its hierarchical file system, or HFS+. Macs can read NTFS. Little issue sometimes with writing it, but basically Macs, because historically they had to live in a Windows world, Apple has pretty much been able to read Windows drives. And certainly if you format it FAT32 or FAT, extended FAT, you can read it on both platforms. The problem is that Windows can't read HFS+. You can, two choices here then. You can buy software. Paragon and others make software that you can put on your PC that will allow it to read the Mac file system. Or, and this is the choice I almost always opt for, you can format that hard drive with a format that both Mac and PC can read. Now, it's a large hard drive, so you know, you're going to have to copy the data off of it, format it, and then copy it back on. And 4 terabytes means you'd need another 4 or better terabyte hard drive to do that. That might be a pain in the behind. But that would be the easiest thing to do. Format it extended FAT, and then everything is happy. The Windows can read it. Mac can read it. You can have giant files on it, all of the above. If that's not a good solution for you, then you're going to go out and there's a free open source file system program for Windows. Is it Fuse? I can't remember what it's called. And then there's Paragon. So there's ways to do this, and that might be the easiest thing. It's basically a driver, right? It lets you read Mac drives. So if you have it on a Mac, you can copy it off, format it with the Mac, format it .ext/fat, and then copy it back on. It's the lowest common denominator, as somebody said. Apple next year, this will be very interesting if they do this. I think, you know, I'm going to wait and see. But if they do this, this is very good. Has a new file system called APFS that is neither Windows nor Macintosh has a very modern file system. File system is actually pretty important. Because why? Because data integrity is very important, right? Your data and knowing that the data on your drive is accurate and doesn't have missing pieces is very important. We don't pay enough attention to that. There are much better file systems out there that preserve data integrity. And Apple is going to reinvent its file system, which hasn't been modified much in 30 years, to support data integrity. So that will be a big improvement, APFS, when that comes out in the fall. That, of course, will also be incompatible with Microsoft. Microsoft needs to do the same thing. NTFS is, even though it's newer, it is not new enough. It is not careful enough with your data. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
That's a great article, Al Chandra. We're going to put that in the show notes at techilabs.com. Make use of four ways to read Windows, to read Mac disks on a Windows.
When I started working in the admissions office, there was a woman who was the manager of data integrity.
That's a good name. That's a good title. Manager of data integrity.
She did the name and address changes.
Right. Right. That's important. That's her full-time job.
Yeah. Well, it became a very small part of my job when she went away.
Oh.
But systems changed, and it became a much easier.
Yeah, yeah.
Although they were very strict rules.
But you want one of these new modern copy-on-write file systems like ZFS. Yeah. And ZFS is amazing. It's like night and day, night and day. Hey, Scott Wilkerson.
Hey, Leo.
How are you
LaPorte?
Doing today?
I'm doing
Is it raining
fine.
Down your way, too?
A little bit, yeah.
Love this.
Or it was, anyway. I'm not sure if it is right now.
We've had rain for 4 or 5 days now.
Wow.
It's going to rain on Halloween, I think.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, I don't care. It's good for the kids.
They're predicting no rain on Halloween down here.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a little early. We'll
get some more tonight, probably.
Yeah.
So they say. But
yeah.
We had a pretty good dousing. I think it was Thursday night.
Yeah, we need it.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's too early to say the drought's broken or anything. But
no. I think so. It's definitely. It feels kind of nice, you know.
Oh, I love it. I really love it.
We haven't had any so long. It's really.
I was in Florida yesterday. It's so humid and moist and green.
I hate that.
I don't mind. I like it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want it all the time, which they have, of course. And in the summer, it's really bad. But
really bad.
I like humidity. I love it when I go to the tropics.
Well, yeah. Again, but if it's hot, then it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, you just strip down.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah. which I'm way too want to do. I'll do that at the drop of a hat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just take off all my clothes. No, Michael's going to be trick-or-treating. He's wearing he's got a costume, some video game character from some. It's so funny. The kids like these video games that are like 6-8-bit graphics. It's just amazing.
Here in Burbank, we have a Friday night, last Friday of the month kind of thing with food trucks out on the street.
Oh, I love that. That's fun.
Last night, they were all out in force in costume. It was amazing. It's only like half a block from my house, so I like to, you know, walk up there and walk around and get something to eat and stuff. It was fun.
I'm a little groggy from all that flying.
Oh, how long were you there?
A day.
Oh.
we took a red eye Wednesday and then flew back yesterday.
Oh, man. Hardly enough time. You didn't even get
acclimated. I was just there for IT Pro TV's grand opening event, and that was it. We came back. It was fun. Met a lot of fans.
Cool.
A lot of fun, yeah. What do you want to talk about today?
Oh, I finally saw the movie that I think is a real game changer. So this is a point in history.
Oh, I want to see Billy Lynn.
Yeah, Billy Lynn.
I really want to see that.
I saw the – and believe me, it's going to be worth it. I unfortunately, the nearest Dolby Cinema to you is near San Jose.
Mind going down to Fremont. I think
it's worth it in this case.
I told Lisa we really should go down for this.
Yes. Yes, I saw it.
Is it open now?
No, November 11th. I got a preview screening.
And oh well, let's talk about it. This is good. That's a good subject. Yeah. Hey, he's here, Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek, and his eyes are wide because he's just back from the movie of the year. Says Scott. Hello, Scott Wilkinson.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
Scott is the host of the Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG, our podcast network. He also is editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. So you saw Ang Lee's new movie,
yep,
Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Yes. A really unfortunate name in a sense because it's so long and people have a hard time remembering it. But it's the name of the novel on which the movie is based. So what are you going to do?
Ang Lee is, of course, an amazing director. Most recently, Life of Pi.
Yeah.
Which used computer graphics to amazing effect.
Yep. And beautiful 3D as well,
3D, yeah. So this time he's decided to use the state-of-the-art cameras to make a movie that you'll never see. Some will. You saw it.
Yeah, you will see it.
I remember because he premiered it in New York and they had to build a special theater for it.
Well, they had to install special projectors.
And so New York has it. L.A. will have a theater.
Yep. And there'll be a couple in China and one in Taiwan. And the point here, and it's very important to understand, is that those few theaters are the only ones that will be able to show it at the full specifications that Ang Lee shot it at, which were 4K spatial resolution, 4K by 2K, essentially, 3D. And the most important part, 120 frames per second.
Wow.
Now, virtually all movies are shot at 24 frames per second.
That's film speed.
Which is, it's film speed, but it got translated over into digital. Digital still uses it.
It was chosen to save film stock. That was the lowest frame rate you could use and still look like things were moving without being too herky-jerky.
You know, I thought so too, but it's the lowest frame rate you can use and have decent sounding audio from an audio track imprinted on the film.
Yeah, that was also, that was part of it. Yeah.
But now we don't have film anymore, except in a few rare cases.
We're used to that look, though.
Exactly. And a lot of people who saw the premiere at the New York Film Festival came out saying, oh, it doesn't look like a movie. It doesn't look like cinema. It looks like video, or it looks hyper real. This is a word that people often use as well. And I agree, it does not look like 24 frame per second movie. It doesn't. But Ang Lee is trying to push the boundaries of cinema. He's trying to develop basically a new language of cinema that has that breaks the bounds of this 24 frames per second that was because 100 years ago we had to do it to save on film stock. We don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So he shot at 120 frames a second. And unfortunately, though, digital cinema projectors that are in the most cinemas in the world now can't do 4K at 120 frames per second.
It's too much bandwidth.
It's too much data. That's exactly right. And so there are some projectors that can do it, and they use them in New York, but they aren't digital cinema projectors. They're simulator projectors and like theme park ride projectors. They don't have the same security as digital cinema projectors.
So they're worried about piracy.
They are. That's right.
Interesting.
So they're going to show it in a couple of places, but in the Dolby cinemas, of which there are now 31 in the U.S., they will show it at 120, I think, I'm pretty sure, at 120 frames per second at 2K resolution. Mm. So they're going to reduce the spatial resolution, the number of pixels on the screen, but they're going to keep what's called the temporal resolution.
So you, but you saw it in everything mode.
No, I didn't. Oh. I saw it at a Dolby Cinema. Okay. Actually, Dolby's private Dolby Cinema in Hollywood. At 2K resolution, okay. But at 120 frames per second, and in 3D.
So, what do you think?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. I thought it was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, the story itself is really compelling. And it's about... the novel has been called The Catch-22 of the Iraq War. And I think that's very apt.
Yeah.
Very apt. It's a very, very interesting... very moving, compelling story. And Ang Lee, at 120 frames per second, he wanted to capture more of the emotion, more of the depth of the story. And I think he really did. Dig this. At 120 frames a second in 4K, his actors could not wear makeup.
What?
Because it looked too obvious. It was so clear.
You could see it.
You could see it in such a way that he said, that looks fake. I don't want that. I want this to be real. I want this to really be real. And so his actors did not wear makeup. He also had to instruct them or direct them how to act differently.
Really?
They had to be more authentic. They had to be to take the character internal more. And that comes out in the image.
Interesting.
Changes in skin tone as someone gets angry, for example.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
So it's good for method actors. Less
gorgeous.
So interesting. Huh.
Yeah, it's just beautiful in every way. I wrote about it on AVS Forum. I hope people will go check it out on the homepage. I go into pretty much detail all about the technology and what he's doing and so on. Now, in most theaters, even non-Dolby theaters, you won't be able to see... 120 frames per second. And so in many cases, it'll be folded down to 24 frames per second because that's what most theaters are equipped to do. And the interesting thing is that the way he folded it down from 120 to 24 gives you a better result than if it had been shot at 24 to begin with.
Interesting.
There are some technologies that he used from a company called Real-D that let you blend frames together and adjust how the shutter works. And so the result is really very beautiful. So I highly recommend it as a movie, but also as an example or an exemplar of what the future of cinema might be.
Yeah. So it's a good movie.
It's an excellent movie.
Not that we care, but...
It's
a good movie. Okay.
It's an excellent
movie.
Worth
seeing, even if you weren't seeing it in one of those fancy-dancy theaters.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Now, if you can get to a Dolby Cinema, which I have a list on AVS Forum, too, where they are. The closest one to you is Fremont, California, near San Jose.
Yeah, I'll go down and see it there. I'd love to see it. So if I came to L.A., I could see it in the high frame rate and 4K?
Yeah.
What theater is that?
Well, we don't know yet. We think it's going to be the ArcLight Hollywood, but that has not.
They haven't announced it. November 11th, this opens.
I know.
And they haven't announced the theater.
In fact, after this screening, Ang Lee and one of his producers did a little Q&A, and I asked him, I said, well, where is it going to be in L.A.? And he said, well, we don't know yet. We're still working on it. So,
well, you know, listening to this show is in it. Steve Martin is in it.
Oh, man, and he's great.
He told me about it. I wish I'd asked more questions because he said, yeah, they did the fancy thing with the camera. And I went, oh, I had no idea. I wish I'd asked more questions. All I remember him talking to me is about he had to relearn his Texas accent, which is funny because he was born in Texas. Because he plays the football coach.
He plays the owner of the Dallas Cowboys.
Ah.
It's fictional. It's fictional.
Yeah.
This is a fictional novel.
Yeah.
And he's the fictional owner of the Dallas Cowboys. Most of the story takes place during the Thanksgiving Day Dallas Cowboys football game.
Yeah, I've seen the trailer.
Yeah.
It looks great.
In 2004 is when the movie is set.
Well, and I'm just going to come down to L.A. That's what I'm going to do. I have to see it just so I can say yay or nay on the format. I'm sure it's a wonderful movie and everyone should go see it. In whatever theater they do, but I would like to know more about the technology.
I really want you to see this in the way Ang Lee.
Well, as soon as they announce a theater,
I'll let you know.
We can get down there pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Scott Wilkinson, he's the host of Home Theater Geeks at twit.tv/HTG. He's also a great person to read on the AVS forum at avsforum.com. Read all about Billy Lynn's long halftime. Oh, I've run out of time. I can't tell you the whole title. I can never, you can't remember it either.
I know. That's the unfortunate
part. But if you call it Billy Lynn, I think that's, people will get it.
I think a lot of people call it just Billy Lynn.
Or B-L-L-H-T-W.
It's here introducing
I sometimes call it B-L-L-H-T. Yeah.
B-L-L-H-T-W. Yeah.
Or W, yeah.
Yeah. B-L-L-H-T-W was a wonderful movie. No, it's. I felt bad because Steve mentioned he was in this and he started talking about the camera stuff and I didn't understand. I thought, oh, it's 3D or maybe it's 4K. I didn't understand it was also HFR.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have talked about how that changed the acting and no makeup.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No makeup.
Wow.
The other one other interesting thing is that when the shot in the movie, if you come to a shot that is from Billy Lynn's perspective, the actors are looking directly into the camera.
Which is how interesting.
Very interesting, and I think effective. I think it worked, and it's very rare to do that.
Well, if you're Ang Lee, you would want to think about ways to use this new medium since it's more direct and real. Well, maybe break the fourth wall and, wow, how interesting. I would think it would be a little discomforting when the actor looks right at you and he's like there.
He's right there, and he looks so real. And he's looking right at you, and he's talking right at you. It's an astonishing effect, really. Yeah. You wouldn't think, oh, so big deal. You look right into the camera. But how often does that happen in movies? Rarely.
No. Yeah. Well, it does. Almost you know who uses it to good effect is in the House of Cards, Kevin Spacey, when he turns and addresses the camera. That's really a great effect. But that shows you how rare it is, breaking the fourth wall.
Right. And it's in the case
they're not breaking the fourth wall.
You're not breaking the fourth wall. I mean, you sort of are because you're looking straight at the audience, but you're not addressing the audience. Like Kevin Spacey, he's addressing the audience. You know, he's saying, oh, yeah, well, what
I know. Yeah. So Dr. Mom says Shirley Temple used to do that a lot.
Oh, really?
In the 30s. Imagine if Shirley Temple could do her movies today in high frame rate 4K. Yeah. Well, if you're listening, if you ever want to call in and tell us what it was like to act with that rig, I'm sure the cameras are big, right? They're dual cameras, but with single lens. So I was asking, I guess they use mirrors to.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was shot in 3D. The only unfortunate part for me was that Dolby Vision, Dolby Cinema, uses Dolby 3D, which are these spectrum separation glasses. And because I wear prescription glasses, there are these little internal reflections between the inner part of the Dolby glasses, 3D glasses, and the outer part of my glasses, which causes kind of a milky halo around the image. And
I hate glasses, man.
I know.
Does it have to be 3D? Wouldn't HFR 4K be enough?
Well, I don't think you're going to see 120 frames a second 2D.
Really?
I don't know. AMC, which owns all of the theaters in the U.S. that have Dolby Cinemas in them, has decided in general that they're not going to show their high dynamic range content in 3D.
Huh.
I don't know if they're going to make an exception in this case.
Huh.
Because for Ang Lee, 3D was a critically important part of the whole movie. And he used it to beautiful effect. I mean, I actually ducked once when the team is throwing a football, some footballs around.
I look forward to seeing it. Hey, we got to take a break. Can you stick around for the top of the hour?
Sure, happy
to. Hang in there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Rick is on the line from Glendora. Hi, Rick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hello.
I got a weird thing. Something called a free file viewer, and it's a HTML file. And I'm wondering, it's asking for an update. Should I update, and how can I check to see if it's really good or spyware.
Yeah, that's not. Let's uninstall that as quickly as you can. I don't trust
it. You think it's a spy, huh?
Well, first of all, let me tell you about HTML. That's the language of the web. So you already have a free HTML viewer. It's called your browser. You probably have several. You don't need anything special for HTML. So that worries me right off the top, right? It's free. It views files. It views HTML files. That's called a browser. You don't need that. So, yeah, I would uninstall it. Is there a problem you're trying to solve with this program?
No. I just saw it. It keeps popping up asking for an update, and that scares me.
Yeah, it should. Okay, a couple of things you want to do real quick. You probably don't have malware per se, although, boy, lately I'm very nervous about the rate of infection that PCs and Internet of Things devices are going through. It almost is impossible for you not to get infected these days unless you're extremely careful. So the first thing I want you to do is run Microsoft's free malware removal tool. You're on Windows, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So what version of Windows are you on?
10.
Okay, good. So good news about 10 is it's probably the most secure version of Windows. So you're pretty locked down as long as you're doing those updates, and I'm sure you are. So what you do is you hit Windows key and the letter R at the same time. That's the run command, Windows key R, and you type in MSRT. This will open a program that you don't actually have a shortcut to in your Windows menu. But it's there. Microsoft not only put it on your machine, but they update it every time they do those Patch Tuesday updates. They update the malicious software removal tool. So if you do Windows key R, or actually even just Windows key and type M, let's see, let me get it right, MSRT and hit return. No, that's not MRT. Maybe that's it. Yeah, there it is. I'm sorry. I added an S. Type MRT return. It will say, do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device? Yes. The Microsoft Windows malicious software removal tool? Yes. And then do a thorough scan. That's not 100%, but it will capture a lot of malicious software on your system. Do you have an antivirus on your system?
Yes, sure do.
Okay, which one?
My antivirus is...
It came with a computer. Came with the computer probably, and you keep the subscription up to date.
Sure do.
Okay,
I'm always there.
All right, so that's another scanner to run on that one. I do the MRT first because that does a good job. In fact, when you run it, they'll give you a list of malware it finds, and of course, Windows 10 comes with an antivirus built in called Defender. Usually, that's sufficient.
I run that.
Yeah. So, you know, the problem is antiviruses there's a category of programs that aren't exactly malware. You installed them. So the antivirus is going to assume you know what you're doing. Problem is the way you installed it is probably was sneaky. It probably came with a download from a free download site. CNetsDownload.com or Softpedia, and when you said, "Oh, I just want this," file viewer. When you downloaded it, it had a whole bunch of checkboxes and stuff, and said, "Oh, you'd like this and that," and you probably just said, "Okay, okay, okay," and you end up installing a whole bunch of other stuff on your system, some of which isn't malware because it's uninstallable, and you did in fact ask for it, but I call it malware because you didn't consciously ask for it, and it's doing things you don't want it to do, and it's constantly doing things like asking you to update, install new stuff. So I'm a little nervous that that's what you've got on there. Anything that's free, you're going to pay for it somehow. So run those software checkers, run your antivirus, do a thorough scan. You might, if you look in your browser, on Windows 10, you have two choices that come with it, Internet Explorer and Edge. Check to see if you've got any plugins installed in either of them and make sure that the plugins you have installed are ones you actually want. What will happen a lot of times with these, like download.com, it'll install toolbars to improve your experience. But really all it's doing is putting ads on there. Sometimes they're so obnoxious they actually put ads on pages that have other ads. They replace the ads on one page with another ad, all to their benefit, not yours, or the page you're visiting, for that matter. So, you know, I just, we'll talk a little more about this in a second, because this is terrible, and we're in a really ugly situation right now. And in fact, you inspired me. I'm running the MRT scan right now, doing the thorough scan. Takes a while. It might take 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, depending on the size of your hard drive. Now we move on to Jackson in Richmond. Hi, Jackson.
It's Jason, but that's okay. I've been called worse, Leo.
Jason, sorry.
Hey. No problem. Not a problem at all. Appreciate what you do and your network very much.
Thank you.
I'm fairly tech savvy. I'm trying to give my mom a hand with this. Just like a lot of people, she's using her ISP for her primary email. Not a great idea. She has an iPhone, iPad, Mac. And, of course, as a result, she's having to delete, you know, messages multiple times because, ISPs, it's POP, it's not IMAP.
So you know enough to know that there's two common protocols for email. You mentioned POP, Post Office Protocol. That's been around for ages. That's the one everybody used to have where you log in, download all the email, and log out. The ISP then saves disk space. He erases it. You're responsible, and you only have one copy. So if you have multiple devices, which we all do now, that doesn't work so well. You can always check that box that says leave on server. ISPs don't like it because it fills up their hard drive. But when there is in every email program, you can leave the mail on the server. That means it will be there for some other computer to gather as well. Here's what I would recommend. If your ISP doesn't offer IMAP, which is the better protocol, the more modern protocol designed for people like us who have more than one device, IMAP stores your mail on the server, and then you have the same view on every device. Your inbox is the same. When you delete mail, it deletes it everywhere. When you send a message, it goes to the sent folder everywhere. That's what you want. If your ISP is so old-fashioned that they don't do it, set her up with a Gmail account.
That's what I was thinking, right?
Okay. And then have the Gmail fetch the mail using PopMail from the ISP.
Right.
And then set up her mail client to use IMAP with Gmail.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I didn't know if we should go through getting her a domain and that kind of thing.
You could, but she, you know, and this way she can continue, because what she doesn't want to do is tell all her friends and family, oh, I have a new email address.
Right.
So she can continue to use her ISP's email address.
Sure.
But she gathers it from Gmail. Gmail gathers it from the ISP. That really is the better way to do it. Gmail also has better spam filtering. So
absolutely. Yeah. And at some point I want to get her off her.
Yeah, and that's when you do what you suggested, which is you go somewhere, get a domain name, Google Domains or wherever, you get a domain name,
right,
and then you have that go to Gmail. That's what I do. I think that's ultimately, because then if she changes her email address, that's permanent. She doesn't have to ever tell anybody. She just gets it from a new provider, but always uses the same address. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, as is often the case today, we're brought to you by those great people at Blue Apron. I love Blue Apron. I love what their mission statement, their goal in life is to really bring cooking back into the world in a healthful way. And their mission actually literally is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. And as a Blue Apron customer, let me tell you how they do that. First of all, I love it when I get the Blue Apron box. In the box, three different meal plans and all the ingredients for each of them. You can get them for a couple or for a family. They have plans for both. The recipe card tells you exactly how to make it. All the ingredients inside are fresh, even the meats and fish. It's a refrigerated box, so they're all fresh. From local farms, they sustainably source the seafood. The beef is raised humanely. The chickens are free range. It's all the stuff you would buy. The pork is raised naturally for you and your family. Regenerative farming practices. Local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Delicious meals, too. And I love this. It's about $10 a meal. It's less than if you went to the grocery store and buy these. Grocery stores as much as 60% more expensive because Blue Apron doesn't have the brick and mortar, the clerks, all the overhead that the grocery store has. I love Blue Apron. You're supporting a better food system and you're bringing cooking into your house. If you've got kids, the research shows Blue Apron families cook together nearly three times more often. Now, what I want you to do is go to blueapron.com/twit and look at the menu. Because every week there's a new menu, both for the two-person plan and the family plan. They promise not to repeat more than once a year. So you're going to have a variety of really wonderful, delicious things. Some of them very exotic. Stir-fried sweet potato noodles with Tinkerbell peppers and bok choy. That'll bring a new meaning to your stir-fry. Some of them old favorites, like crispy chicken with mashed potato and spicy collard greens. Seared salmon with glazed carrot and saffron yogurt sauce. Pork meatballs with beet and cranberry agrodolce. South Indian squash curry. So you pick the items you want. You never have to pick any particular item. The family plan, seared chicken with brown rice and glazed carrots. Broccoli and cheese enchiladas with tomatillos and sour cream. You're going to use ingredients you've never used before, but you'll be confident after you do it. And they really will walk you through every bit of it so you know exactly how to prepare. And there's no waste. You get only the items you need. If you need one celery rib, you get one celery rib, one clove of garlic. See, there's no waste. And the house smells delicious and you feel good. And I tell you, you don't have to go shopping. You don't have to plan the meal. It's all there waiting for you. Try it today. BlueApron.com/twit. We're going to get you your first three meals free, which is nice. So you can try it out. Spring it on your... I'll tell you what. You got a romantic night planned? This will make it more romantic, I promise you. BlueApron.com/twit. It's a great community of chefs, great food, serving a really wonderful purpose. BlueApron.com/twit. Your first three meals free. All right. It's time for the very special top of the hour Scott Wilkinson segment.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! I shall put your clock in the view and...
Ah, thank you. That's very
important. You
will
know exactly where you stand. There you go.
So, very good. I have 500 seconds. So, Rusty Bones turned me on to some new headphones by a company called OSSIC, O-S-S-I-C, which I assume is a play on the term ossicle, which is the ossicles are the three tiny bones in the middle ear. So I assume that's where they got that name from. It's kind of clever. 3D audio headphones. Haven't looked much at them yet, but I guess they're... I did look at the website a little bit, and 3D audio. You can pre-order today. But they're going to ship in May of 2017, so it's going to be a while. But it's pretty interesting. I just had a visit yesterday from... a company called Waves Audio, long-time company in the pro audio world. They make plugins for Pro Tools and that sort of thing. And now they've come out with another sort of 3D headphone product, which is an app, basically. You can use any pair of headphones. It doesn't have to be a specific pair of headphones. Any pair of headphones. And it includes a head tracker. So it's this little gizmo that you attach to the top of your headphones, and then as you move around the sound stage, the orientation of the sounds that you're hearing don't move with you. That's been a problem with 3D headphones and what's called virtualization. If you have, if you're playing a game, this is really important for games and virtual reality. If you're playing a game and you're looking in this direction and you see somebody coming from over here, and then you move over there, they move over here. So they keep their relative orientation with respect to where your head is pointed. But with a head tracker, it doesn't. They'll stay where they're supposed to be. So, and that head tracker is going to be less than $80. Now, I heard the demo. It was pretty good. Certainly that head tracker thing worked really well. I didn't get a deep sense that I was listening to sound sources outside of the headphones. But they did, leave me one. So I'm going to play with it a little more and see if I can make it work any better. But it's a pretty cool idea. And this OSSIC thing I'm going to definitely check out as well. Let's see. Thanks, Mike. I'm wearing one of my Simpty shirts. Mike Kaisa and I just went to the Simpty Tech Conference last week. And this coming Thursday's podcast, Home Theater Geeks, will be him and me talking all about that. We pre-recorded it last night because I've got something else that I have to do on Thursday. So we pre-recorded. It'll air on Thursday at the normal time. And so do go check that out. Cabo Zone is asking, how do you feel about LG UHD HDR TVs? As far as OLEDs go, I love them. I think they're great. Wonderful. As far as their LCD TVs go, I don't know. I haven't seen them, but I'll have to tell you that in the years past, I have not thought that the LG LCD TVs have been that great, generally speaking. And I'm pretty sure that some of their LCD TVs do HDR as well. I'm almost certain of that. But as far as their OLEDs go, no question. Those are the TVs to get, really. So that is the answer to that question. Anybody else got any questions? Oh, SoCal Tom and I were talking about whether or not movies are shot at 24 or 30 frames per second. They're actually shot at 24 almost universally, except for this Ang Lee movie and The Hobbit. Peter Jackson shot at 48. And people thought that looked weird. And I thought that looked weird. And Ang Lee, in his Q&A after the movie screening that I saw last week, made a very interesting point. He said he feels that frame rates up to and including 60 frames per second basically don't look natural. But when you get to 120 and probably beyond, then he thinks things look a lot better, a lot more natural. And so Peter Jackson's The Hobbit was at 48. And so that, you know, the question, it did kind of look like a PBS special to me, you know? That's what they complain about, it looking like video. It's not quite the soap opera effect, although you could apply that word to it, that term, but it's more, soap opera effect applies more to TVs that synthesize new frames and put them in between the actual frames coming in from the signal. And that looks pretty weird, I agree. But if you actually capture at the higher frame rate, it's not quite the same thing. It's real data. It's not synthesized data. Still in all, at 48 frames per second, I did see moments in The Hobbit where I thought, wow, that looks an awful lot like a PBS special. But in Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, not a whit of it, not a bit of it, not any hint that it looked like video. It didn't look like film. I will tell you that. It did not look like 24 frames per second. But I don't mind that. I didn't object to that in any way. It's a new format for movies. And so I was very pleased with it. I thought it was beautiful. And in fact, drew me deeper into the picture. Some people after the New York Film Festival screening said, oh, it distracted me from the picture, from the story, this new frame rate. I didn't find that. Maybe they did. I'm not going to question, you know, what their evaluation was. But for me, it actually drew me deeper into the story. And I found it more compelling and more impactful than I've seen before. So I have great, great hope for this.
Well, as soon as they announce a theater.
As soon as they do, I will leave.
I will contact you. Maybe we'll come down for the day and.
Sure.
I can easily, you know, we fly to Santa Rosa. I can literally easily come down for the day, see it, and then come back.
Yeah, and fly into Burbank.
Yeah.
Because it'll probably be in Hollywood.
Right.
You know, which is very
we can
much
literally
closer to Burbank.
Fly down, Uber to the theater, watch the movie, Uber back to the airport, and fly up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if the timing works, you wouldn't have to Uber. Give me a call and I'll take you.
Yeah, because you'd like to see it probably.
I want to see it that way as well.
Yeah.
I saw the 10-minute clip of it at NAB in that full format.
Yeah.
It's also twice as bright as even Dolby.
Well, that will make me happy because that's one of the things I hate about 3D is the reduced brightness. So that'll
exactly.
Help.
Well, in a Dolby Cinema, 3D gets you to 14-foot Lamberts, which is much brighter than most 3D. But the projectors that they will use in these special theaters will get you twice as bright as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not HDR. That's the one disadvantage of going to see one of these special screenings is that they aren't in HDR.
So
yeah. It's just because of the projectors.
Can they do HDR and 4K and 120? No. It's too much data.
Too much data. Afraid so. He's pushing the limits, man, which I love.
I'm really intrigued by, which I didn't know that he had different direction acting and direction, and no makeup and all that stuff. I should have peppered Steve with questions.
Well, now you know. Next time you talk to him,
I haven't talked to him since then. I think. Hey, thanks, Scott.
My pleasure.
Take care.
I'll let you know as soon as I know about the theater.
Good. Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers. Yes, the internet also. High frame rate, 3D, 120 frame per second HDR video. You know, all that high-tech stuff. The world is changing, isn't it? And that's what we talk about here at 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. We also have a website that's free and open to all and no sign-up needed or anything. I don't collect any information about you on it. It's just a place that anybody can go to read what we've talked about, watch the show, listen to the show after the fact, and even make comments and add your thoughts. It's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. I think to comment, you do have to create an account, but we make it very easy for you, and I don't do anything with that. I think that's just more, you know, for anti-spam purposes. Techguylabs.com. So we are just under attack. Let's face it. We are under attack. The internet, you know, when I first got on the internet, and I remember this experience vividly still to this day, 1994, and it was a text-based internet at the time. Browsers weren't common yet. That's just right about when Mosaic came out and all of that. Maybe it was even 93. But I remember getting on a text-based internet connection way back when, in the early days of the internet, and thinking, whoa, this whole world full of populated with all these people doing all these interesting things. There's so much going on here. It's as if you discovered a hidden city in your basement. It was just mind-bending. And then the next reaction I had, this is going to change everything, which was true. I didn't understand quite how it was going to change everything, but at least I could tell this was a big deal. And I was hopeful about it becoming a democratic institution. It would give everybody a voice, would let everybody, you know, and we've seen a lot of that. For instance, it's changed the way we buy things. Nowadays, you can't make a bad product for very long because we all talk to one another on the internet. And if a product's bad, internet-aware consumers will know it right away. So it's really, it's improved, the free flow of information in that respect has really improved life. What I misunderstood or I guess didn't give enough weight to is the fact that, and I knew this, that there's a certain percentage of people that are just awful people. In the world. I believe, a small percentage because I'm a wide-eyed optimist. I think most people are good and kind and generous. We're all capable of being jerks from time to time. And then there's some people who'd make it a full-time job. And what I didn't really understand is that in the same way that we would all get a voice, they would get a voice too. And if you're really a jerk, you can use the leverage of the internet to amplify your impact on others. Dramatically. So just as it amplifies your impact for the good, it can amplify your impact for the bad. And I really underestimated how much people would take advantage of this. Bad guys creating malware. At first, you know, it was just vandalism. It was just teenagers just kind of acting stupid. I defaced your website. But it quickly became a money-making scam. You know, we started getting the scam emails and then ransomware and, you know, it really got out of hand. It is getting more out of hand all the time. Then you know, cyber criminality expanded to nation states and we started to see cyber attacks. you know, countries. I mean, in the past, if a country, let's say, you know, somebody like Vladimir Putin at Russia wanted to impact the American election, there really wouldn't be much he could do. Well, that's changed, hasn't it? That's changed. You also see now evil geniuses, some of them not so genius, taking advantage of the Internet of Things. We have a lot of devices online now. Used to be, you know, you might have one computer online through a modem, right? That was all you could do. Now, if you do a little inventory of your home, you might find many devices online, not just your computers, but your phones, your tablets, your picture frames, your televisions, your microwave ovens, your dishwashers, your washing machines, your doorbells, your thermostats, cameras everywhere. You know, the average home probably has a dozen devices online, maybe more. And some of those devices are not well designed in terms of security. They're hackable, very easily hackable. And we're starting to see the impact of that. Experts have been warning about this for years. But it took a little while. It takes a little while for the bad guys. And you know, this funny thing is, I'm talking about, of course, a week ago, the internet was brought down by an attack that used cameras and internet routers that weren't properly secured, couldn't be, in fact, properly secured, to take down a big chunk of the internet. And now we're learning that we think it might not have been expert hackers or even governmental hackers, but what they call script kiddies, hackers that didn't really know what they were doing, but the tools are out there and so easy to use that they could. And that's really scary, because you can think of a kind of a, you know, a kid that is basically a sociopath, has no really regard or understanding of how other people feel or what the world is even like. A kid who's been kind of sheltered, maybe played video games most of his life, never really got to know other people. And this kid now has the tools to do things like bring the internet down. And that's the situation we're in right now. So we have bad actors using our tools on the internet to take over your computer for blackmail purposes with ransomware. We have state actors using computers, hacking computers for political purposes, as well as a new form of warfare. By the way, we do this too. I'm not saying it's just them. It's us too. We do it, absolutely. The federal government. That's one of the things we learned, isn't it, from the Snowden revelations. We do it to our own people. And a new class of malicious script kiddies. Because there's no benefit to bringing down the internet. That's kind of back on the, you know, the vandalism scale. Malicious script kiddies who go, you know, we've learned, for instance, there was a company that would do this for, you know, as little as $30 a month subscription fee. You could bring any site down. They ran a whole bunch of what they call botnets, and you could hire them. And it was cheap, which meant that any, you know, kid who had a, you know, didn't like school or didn't like a company could just bring it to its knees. It's a terrifying thought, and I don't know what the solution is. I think the companies that make the operating systems, Microsoft, Apple, Google, have done a pretty good job, the best job they can anyway, of securing their devices. But there's so many other devices out there that have not been properly secured. Like, for instance, these cameras and routers made by a company in China, Shanghai, that really didn't put any security into them at all. They've since, you know, updated the firmware and asked to recall the hardware. But the problem is they can't update the hardware remotely. So you have to pack your camera up, send it back to China. Not going to happen. There's still going to be millions of devices out there that are just waiting to be hacked and exploited. It makes me sad because the promise of the internet was so incredible, but so utopian. And most people do use it that way, and it has changed the world in so many good ways. It just takes a few rotten apples to ruin it for the rest of us. 88. I'm sorry. I shouldn't bring you down like that. Think of all the good things that the internet does, right? 8888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. Let's talk high tech. Talk about the good stuff, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. So we did top of the line on both the MacBook Pros. We did maxed it out right all the way, right?
Yep.
Turned up the knobs, all the dials on the 13 and the 15, which meant the 15 was $4,000. Mm-hmm. When I saw that, I went... And I asked John to dial the hard drive size down because that's a 2 terabyte hard drive. That's what's really that would be $1,000 less to get a 1 terabyte,
or even less for a 512.
And 512 would be sufficient because with that I'd probably dock it and use. I have a Thunderbolt 3.
Are you going to use it or is it just for MacBreak Weekly? Is it going to be a?
Well, what I'm thinking, possibly is making that my home and studio. It would be nice to have one computer, and then get. If I could get the 5K LG here and at home, I'd dock it, right? And so it'd become my computer for here, computer for home, and computer for there. Although, I also had this thought that maybe I would use the Surface Studio in the on the round table in the flat mode. But that might really look stupid. We'll have to try it.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
It might be cool, right? So anyway, we'll see. So I don't know. Be nice to have the 115, and just carry it back and forth and have it be the...
Well, then you have to carry it back and forth.
And then I have to carry it, which is not ideal.
You forget it.
Yeah. Well, we have plenty of other computers. In fact, way too many. As many computers now as I have phones, which is ridiculous. But I do feel like I have to try them. It's Microsoft's first desktop ever. No, I never get AppleCare, Mike B. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes on the mobiles, on the phones I do, but never on the desktop. I'm really liking this iPhone 7. You like it?
Yes.
Yeah. And I really like the jet black. It's just beautiful. Even though it's a fingerprint magnet. It's notably faster. Amazing battery life. I mean, the real test is when I'm flying. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. I think I brought everybody down. I'm sorry. The internet is such a wonderful, beautiful, positive thing. And then you get these just jerky jerks. I wish you could just spank them. I think they just need a good spanking. Just spank them. Say, no, that's not right. Didn't your mother teach you? How to treat other people? Jay, Providence, North Carolina. Good to see you, Jay. How you doing?
Very good. I wanted to see if it's possible to make some very long videos with an iPhone 5S. I was cut off at about 30 minutes when I tried to make one before, and I realize the storage is small, but I'm wondering if I could connect an external hard drive in such a way that it would record direct into the external hard drive.
Cannot do that, to my knowledge. iPhones don't have that capability. Some Android devices do. They call it USB to go. But Apple doesn't allow you to have a hard drive attached to the iPhone. That's not the issue, though. Generally, what happens is these the pickups, the camera pickups, if they're run for too long, they get hot. So that's one reason that you see this all the time in still cameras as well that aren't made for video. They'll just shut down. But there's actually, I think, a larger reason for this. I've been told this, and I believe. Cameras that record more than 30 minutes are taxed differently in the EU than cameras. They're taxed as video cameras. So clearly the technology exists because video cameras can do it to record continuously. We're doing it. I do it right now with all of my cameras as we stream video, right? We don't turn them off after 30 minutes. And presumably they could record to an external drive or an internal drive. So I think at least in some cases, I'll tell you how I know this. My old Canon 5D, same thing. It would stop recording video before 30 minutes was up. And there's a firmware update, a third-party firmware update that turns that feature off and lets it continue to record. So that confirms the technology can do it. It was for tax reasons that they didn't. The Magic Lantern firmware will let you do that on a Canon DSLR. So tells me that there's more at play. They do heat up. The chips do heat up. And in other words, the answer to your question is I think you're stuck. When you buy an iPhone, You don't buy an iPhone thinking, I'm going to do whatever I want with this thing. No, no. You buy an iPhone going, I love what Apple's doing here, and I'm going to do it Apple's way. Because you really don't. You change it at your peril. Sure, probably there's a jailbreak for the 5S. You know, they patch those. Apple patches those every time you get an update. They break the jailbreak. But probably there's a jailbreak, and probably there's software you could put on a 5S that would allow you to record longer than half an hour. I wouldn't recommend that. Generally, jailbreaking an iPhone. See, my philosophy is if you buy Apple gear, one of the things you're buying is that I'm going to do it Apple's way. Apple knows what they're doing. Apple knows better than I do how things ought to be. And it's one of the reasons I really like Android is because that philosophy doesn't exist. Now, as a result, battery life is not as good on Android. There's maybe security issues that don't exist on Apple. There are certainly benefits to Apple's way to do it. But generally speaking, if you have an iPhone, just accept the limitations because that's Apple knows better than we. Freddie in Yonkers, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Freddie.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm good. How are you?
Show.
Thank you.
My question is, I have my brother-in-law laptop, ThinkTemp. I'm trying to change the password, right? I'm able to get into the recovery menu in the root system. And every time I try to type the amount RW.
So your brother gave you a laptop.
No. My brother-in-law passed away.
Oh, he passed away. I get it. And so when he passed away, he didn't tell you his passwords.
Correct.
And what you'd like to do is unlock it, of course, because inside there's all sorts of financial information and things that you need to know to settle his estate.
Right.
It's a Windows laptop?
No, it's a Linux.
It's a Linux laptop.
Right.
Okay. It is possible to secure a Linux laptop in such a way. If he really wanted to be private, you can secure a Linux laptop in a way that you can't get into it. Are you able to get the login screen up or?
I'm able to get into the recovery mode in the root system.
Okay. So you can read the hard drive. See, what I do with my Linux laptops, I encrypt the hard drive, which means if I die, no one's getting in there. So that's good news. He didn't do that. You can get in and read the hard drive.
Yeah.
You just can't log into his account.
Right. And I'm in the recovery menu.
Yeah.
In the root system. And trying to change it. And every time I type anything, I get the login incorrect.
Yeah.
And it says give root password for many functions.
Right. I'm trying to think what would be the best way to do this. Normally, you would go in a single user mode, which allows you to run as root without a password. Try that. Somebody in the chat room saying if you can get Linux unlock CDs, that will reset the password. And it just depends. You know, he may have turned encryption on his home directory, which would also mean that's unusable without the password. There's no way to recover it. Linux really is well suited to people who want privacy, but I can see it's going to pose a problem for you, Freddie, in getting into your brother's account. It just depends how paranoid he was. If he just had a login to his account, I think if there are Linux unlock disks, if you Google that, you can boot into it and unlock it. And I think it really depends on the distribution. I think you can also go into single use. Look up how to get in a single user mode on his distro. Commonly, it's Control S or before as the boot screen comes up. If you hit a command prompt, you can enter single user mode. That usually lets you have root access, and once you have root access, you can get to everything. Unless he chose to encrypt his home directory. And if he did, then you really can't get into it. Let me recommend something for everybody who's listening to this saying, oh, you know, my brother's going to have the same problem if I pass. I use a password vault called LastPass. I bet you others do this as well, but LastPass does this, where you can designate family members as kind of in case of emergency contacts. If you open your LastPass vault, You can see an option for what is it? What is it? An advanced? Let me see if I can find it. It was a really nice. I'm in enterprise, so I can't see it. But somewhere on the sidebar there, there's like emergency contact. And what they do is you can designate somebody. If you pass, that person sends an email to LastPass. LastPass sends you an email saying somebody's trying to access your account. You set the time limit, like 3 days later, a month later, and that gives you time to get that email and say, no, don't let them in. But if you don't respond because you've passed on, they can get into your accounts. And I think that's important. I use that, and I think it's great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You're out.
1Password does that, too. It's called their emergency kit. I got to log in and... I use the enterprise version on this desktop, so I can't see it. It's not a feature of enterprise. Yeah, we've made this a depressing show, haven't we? The caller was at a prompt asking for root password. First thing to do is hit return. It's an interesting issue, isn't it? It's good to deal with these. Emergency access, that's it. Thank you, CFGR. I turned that on so Lisa has emergency access, so if something happens to me. Oh, look who's here. Hello, JJ.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great.
Good.
How's the baby? How's Jack?
Baby's sleeping right now, so fingers crossed he doesn't wake up and scream on air.
I had a screaming baby next to me, and not quite next to me, next row over on the plane home to last night, and that's fine. I just put in my headphones and dozed off.
Yeah, and you know what? I've always felt that way.
Yeah,
you know, it's really the passenger's problem. It's not the parents. I mean, although it does bug me when parents don't even try to soothe the baby. And just let them run up and down the aisle and things like that.
That's different. No, that's not okay.
But there's a screaming baby. It's your fault for not bringing your earplugs or scream, you know. Headphones and music.
Yeah. We always used to nurse Abby and Henry if we flew with the babies while they were still nursing. And nursing, because it clears their ear canals, that usually works. So.
For sure. Well, Jack hasn't flown yet.
That's the other thing. But, I mean, you know, you go home for the holidays. You want to bring the baby. You know, I understand that.
For sure.
Yeah.
We're making the in-laws come out here this year for Christmas instead of going freezing cold Toronto.
Yeah. They'd probably be thrilled. They'll be thrilled. I flew Delta.
So you went to Gainesville.
Yeah.
That's right. How was it?
It was fun. It was grand opening for IT Pro TV's new studio. I'm so jealous. Man, they built a beautiful studio. And they had a wonderful party. I danced my tuchus off.
Awesome.
But it was one of those, you know, turn and burns. We had a red eye, and you can't get direct to Gainesville from San Francisco, so you fly to Atlanta and then from Atlanta to Gainesville and back. And, you know, it's only 4 hours to Atlanta, so it's middle of the night when you get there. And you have to sit in the airport for a couple of hours and fly. It was bad, but it's all right. I slept pretty well.
Good. And did you get some local food? I'm trying to think of my favorite place. Is it Pascal's? Peschel's in Atlanta Airport?
No, I didn't get to. Boy, that airport's amazing. We'll talk about this on the air. That is an amazing airport. Okay. You know, I mean, it's too big. You got to take a train to get anywhere. But, wow, so many good restaurants. And, you know, and what I realized, I didn't know this at the time, but I can use my American Express card to get into the Delta.
Centurion. Delta. You can only get one person, though.
Well, both of us have a card.
Good.
So, yeah,
otherwise,
you're right.
That's money.
Yeah, otherwise it's $30. But Lisa, by chance, brought her American Express card, too. That worked out really well. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Johnny Jett is here. He's our travel guru. Shows us how to travel better through technology. Quiz question for everybody. You'll know the answer, Johnny. What is the busiest airport in the world? In the world. You know, you asked me that, I would have said maybe Dubai or JFK.
Dubai's picking up. JFK is top five.
Number one, you know.
You were there yesterday.
Hartsfield, Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. What? Why is it? 250,000 people a day go through Hartsfield Airport in Atlanta.
I also think it's takeoff and landings. So, because Chicago, they go back and forth with Chicago.
Chicago's a hub, and so I guess so is Atlanta, and that's probably
why, they're both big-time hubs.
I'm sitting and watching as we wait for our flight. Planes take off every 30 seconds. Woom, 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 woom. It is, you know, I mean, there's no respite. And when we left, we had to wait 45 minutes in line. The jet, you know, we get in the plane, and the jet is slowly getting through the line, and it took us 45 minutes to get off the ground. And I guess that's normal. On the other hand, if you're stuck in Hartsfield, I've never seen so many good restaurants.
Yeah, great. So I, when I have layovers there, although I stopped flying Delta, I used to fly Delta a lot. Pascal's. You get like collard greens, all Southern food. And people are so friendly in Atlanta. I love going through there. And I just don't like Delta's miles. They had Delta still runs the best airline in the U.S. It's just that their miles are, you know, they call them sky pesos because they're really worth
nothing. Sky pesos. Wow. Well, I don't, you know, unlike you, I don't choose airlines for the frequent flyer perks. I just, because it's convenient. I went Delta because that's how you get to Gainesville, really.
Right. Well, I think most people choose airlines based on price and then on time, how long the connection is going to be. I sometimes choose on Wi-Fi or if I feel like a certain type of food and I need to lay over somewhere, I will stop in a certain airport.
Yeah. I like Delta, though. I think it's a nice airline.
Delta's the best. They really are the best in America. I mean, they run on time. But again, it's just the whole mileage thing and the way they treat the freaking flyers who don't spend a lot of money is not great.
Yeah.
If you spend a lot of money, you know, they're the ones you want to fly.
Oh, okay. Good to know. So. Sky pesos.
So,
lira.
You know, speaking of travel, I know you're a big cruise guy.
Yeah, I love the books.
October, you know, the cruise industry coined October, plan a cruise month. And it's just a way to generate sales. They do that for January. January is like they call it the wave season, I believe they call it. So they're always trying to get – they always offer really good deals, and they're trying to get people to book cruises way in advance. So, you know, obviously the best place to go, especially if you've never cruised before, is to your – to a cruise agent, and I know that's what you do.
Yeah, thanks to your advice. I always thought I could book everything myself. I'm a computer guy, right? I could do it all online. But I'm glad now I use a travel agent. She's great. Jane listens to the show. She's fabulous. Yeah.
Yes. So I would, you know, number one, you know, pick a cruise specialist because they have all kinds of connections.
Yep.
Especially if you never cruised before. But if you have cruised before and you're pretty savvy, then the place to get really good deals besides the toolbar on my website is cruisecritic.com.
I always go there to read the reviews.
They have great reviews and also, but they have really good deals. So if you click the deals tab and then you'll find out, you know, they even have last minute deals. They'll have deals in advance. And I was just looking at it just now and, you know, they have some that are 85% off or that dropped 80% in price from 2 days ago.
Are cruise lines like airlines if they sail with an empty cabin that's lost revenue so that they, if you get closer to the sale date, sometimes have big deals? Is that how it works?
I am not a cruise specialist, but yes, I believe so in certain markets. But the thing is, so they try and offer incentive to book way in advance.
Yeah.
So that's why when you're on a cruise, they always give you a sales pitch to book your next cruise and they'll give you 10% off or whatever they're trying to give you.
Yeah.
But then if you try and, if you book kind of like midway, a few months out or 4 months out, you're not going to get a great deal. I would wait. But the chance you take is that if it fills up, although these days there's so much cruise inventory that it's unlikely.
Our last riverboat cruise, capacity 150 people, it only had 90 on it.
And that's because there's so much
competition. There's 100 boats on the river, right?
Just keep building them. Five years ago, it would have been full and they were charging $5,000 a person. Now there's hundreds of boats and they're charging like $1,400 to $1,500 per person. You can get really good deals, and that's the good side. The bad side is it's almost like Disneyland in some of these ports.
So I'll tell you one reason I like my travel agent, and I know she's saying Leo, say my name, is because she and a good travel agent will have been on all these boats, and I can't stump her. You know, I'll say, well, what about that? She said, well, you know, when I was on, it's like, okay. And that's good because they can tell you, you know, who else is on the trip, what kinds of things to look for, you know. And she's very good in her advice. We wanted to go to the Galapagos, and she gave us, I think, excellent advice about.
Say her name.
Jane Zugsmith's at Travel Store.
Okay.
Yeah. Jane.Z at travelstore.com. Now, no, they see everybody's going to use her now, and I won't be able to get a hold of her anymore. but you were right. I thought travel agents were cooked because of the disintermediation of the internet.
Not
but,
at all.
But the expertise they offer, and that's what's going to happen, right, is once it becomes commoditized, then the difference is the service and expertise that a human can offer over an online booking.
For sure. Yeah. And also the ease of doing it.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
And the one thing about Good Cruise Critic is that they really do in-depth reviews. And I've traveled on countless of press trips, and there's always someone from Cruise Critic when I'm on these cruises.
Well, and there are end-user reviews, too. I always read all the reviews. But like with any review site, you throw out the best and the worst.
Right. But these guys have their experts doing it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you follow travel influencers or bloggers, however you want to call people.
Yeah, like, we follow Johnny Jett. If Johnny Jett likes it, I'm going. I do everything you say.
You got to make sure that, and some of these guys don't always tell the truth. I believe Cruise Critic does. I tell the truth. Yeah. There are some bloggers out there that, they're getting paid to say something or they're afraid to say something.
Here's the deal. In my opinion, especially with cruises, there are some users, some travelers who are very picky. And so you'll read these cruise reviews. The butler just didn't come quick enough. I had to wait 15 whole minutes for dinner. And you realize, okay, it's one of those.
Yeah.
And then there's some people who have never been out of the house and everything's amazing. you have to cut those two.
Exactly. That's why you got to kind of form a relationship with different people like myself. So that way you know what they like and, hopefully it's something that you like.
That's true. Do you do it for movie reviewers too, right? You don't just trust any movie reviewer. You get an idea of what their tastes are and then you know if they coincide with yours. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I mean, your best friend could like Trump and you hate him or something like that. And that
never happens.
No, it actually does.
You're talking about your own life now, aren't you, Johnny? Yes. All right, cruisecritic.com. That's number one. And now usually you have an app for us as well.
I do. So this one is called – it's actually from Fair Compare, but the app is called Event Tourist. So even and then EventTurist, Event Tourist. So it's free on Android and iOS. So I know you like going to festivals and things like this. And what's cool about these guys is that they're picking – flights for you to go on that are cheap to go to these different festivals.
Ah.
So they use an algorithm, and it's for like 200 festivals around the world, including Vietnam, Australia, Spain, and of course the US. And they provide they're looking for this for the cheap flights and what popular events are going on. And then you can find a really good deal. Although, again, a smart traveler won't just trust one place, app, or website. You need to search
compare.
Multiple.
Yeah, that's why we go to johnnyjett.com. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram. He's our travel guru and a proud papa. So expect more like family travel tips soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
Oh,
I didn't mean to say Trump. I meant to say like a movie. Like you.
That's
like a really,
all, you
like,
know, it all, it just leaks
I just
out.
I just couldn't think, but
That's okay. It was appropriate. God knows we're a week and 11 days from the election.
Yeah.
I think most people have made up their mind at this point. It seems to have calmed down.
Everyone's like made up their mind.
You've decided and now you're just going.
I'm independent, but I made up my mind.
Yeah, I already voted. I've already voted. And I can't take, there's no takesies, backsies. In California, don't wait to vote. Don't wait to do your research till voting day, because the initiatives. It took me a long time to figure out what the heck is going on with those.
They send you a book. I mean, I have it on my
table. Can't just read that. You have to go to Ballotpedia and read up.
Ballotpedia?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Okay, here's an example. There are two, 67 and 65, on grocery bags, right?
Okay.
67 says grocers have to. Statewide, it's currently in individual jurisdictions you can't use single-use plastic bags anymore, right? This would be a statewide initiative. And then 65, which looks like a companion initiative, says, and the money that they get from charging you for the bag, if they use a paper bag or you buy a bag, goes to environmental causes, right? So the normal person, if you were an environmentalist, you'd say yes on 67 and 65. Wrong. because 65 is a stealth initiative, and there's several of these, where it appears to be, well, just give the money to environmental causes. But if you read the fine print, which is why they got on the ballot, by the way, because that's what they do. They stand outside of the grocery store and say, you want the money to go to environmental causes? Yeah, yeah, I'll sign it. But if you read the fine print, it then says, and this initiative, kills any other initiative about plastic bags, replaces it with this initiative. Which means if it passes, the courts would then invalidate 67 and say you can use plastic bags again.
Huh.
So it was apparently, it's one of them stealth initiatives that the plastic bag industry snuck in there.
Oh, my God. So which way should I?
Every newspaper in the state said yes on 67, no on 65, because 65, if it gets more votes than, it has to get more votes than 67, would invalidate 67.
So yes on 67, no on 65.
But you wouldn't know that just by reading the ballot thing. You'd say, oh, yeah, but they both make sense. That's, you know.
Okay, so that's good to know. I'm going to have to go to the Ballotpedia.
It happens every time in the state of California because it's very easy to get initiatives on the ballot. And people have figured out, oh, if you make it misleading.
Well, I saw one on TV. I saw the very fine print at the very bottom. I didn't catch what it is. I think it's marijuana, but it was by Sean Parker, funded by Sean Parker.
Yeah, that's the marijuana initiative, yeah. Yeah. I'm voting yes on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
21 over.
Although there are some people who say this, is, believe it or not, some of the growers up here say, no, you don't want this. This is big tobacco. They want to make marijuana a big industry. So it gives 5 years for the little guys and phases them out. Now, voting yes on it. But we live in a sneaky, sneaky world. So you got to read all of you got to read Ballotpedia and read all the nonpartisan stuff and try to figure it out. It's not easy.
I barely have time to change my clothes.
I know, and you can't do it in the voting. You know, people read it on the way to the voting booth.
Yeah. I sometimes read it in the voting
booth. Lisa and I spent a lot of time talking about it, and she said, well, you're going to do on this one. I said, well, I don't. It was really fun.
All right.
But you have to spend some time.
All right,
can she vote? She's not a citizen.
No, oh, she's not a citizen. She can't vote.
But Jack
she's
can.
Got her, she's got her opinions.
In
Jack
18
will be
years,
voting.
You better vote. I made Henry register in the state of Colorado where he's a student so that because it's a swing state. He can have some impact in the swing state.
Sure.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Always
you
good.
Too.
Take care. Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to Del Mar, California. Paul is next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Leo, long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
Some time ago, a couple of months ago, you had a suggestion to let an SSD regain its original performance.
Yes.
And I couldn't find it on your web, so I figured I'd call you.
Oh, I apologize. In theory, everything I say is recorded on the website. But, you know, sometimes I say things in between or offhand, and maybe they don't get written down. So here's the deal, and this is not my idea. If you had asked me, you know, a while ago, I would have said no. But my friend Alan Malventano is an expert on solid-state drives, those new flash drives many computers and laptops come with. And solid-state drives are absolutely faster and better in every respect. They have one minor little thing, and usually it's not an issue. The operating system will take care of this. But it's the way a solid-state drive works. It can slow down a little bit. It's still much faster than a spinning drive, but it can slow down a little bit over time. There's a command in all the solid-state drive electronics, and if the operating system understands it, that will fix this, called trim. And what trim does is it's complicated. It does garbage collection on the drive and releases parts of the drive that are currently in use, even though there's no data on them. So modern operating systems handle this, but sometimes they don't do it regularly enough. So Alan's advice, which frankly stunned me, it stunned me when I first heard it, is run a defrag on your drive. The reason it stunned me is there's no way that you need to defrag a solid-state drive. You don't need to. Solid-state drives don't get fragmented because they have their random access. There's zero seek time. So fragmentation is not a problem. But the reason this works is because a defrag program looks at every sector on the drive and forces the drive to do the trim on all of those sectors. I wouldn't run it a lot. What the thing that's bad for solid-state drives is thrashing a single sector. They all have limited numbers of times you can write to them. So the drives literally fragment themselves on purpose because they want to spread out the use of the drive. They call it wear leveling, and that's a good thing. But defragging, you know, is not necessary in a solid-state drive, except it has this side effect. Even now when I say it, I go, yeah, I don't know, but I trust Alan. So that's the trick. Run your defrag program. You have one in Windows that'll do that. I wouldn't do it more than a couple of three times a year, and only if you notice your drive getting slow.
Yeah, is it going to improve it that much?
No. In fact, I remember sitting in between two Intel guys. Intel makes, and at certainly that time, made the best solid-state drives. And they were arguing, these are the engineers in the solid-state drive division, about whether you need trim or not. One said, no, you don't need it. The other one said, no, you do need it. No, you don't. Yeah, you do. I don't think it makes that much of a difference. It's still, the drive is, no matter what, going to be much faster than anything else. I love solid-state drives. Everybody uses them now on their phone. There's no spinning drives in your phone, in your tablet, and most laptops now come with solid-state drives. And I think in time, all computers will use solid-state drives. What is common now, and you'll see this in the new Surface that Microsoft just put out, the Surface, Creative? Surface Studio, is it has a mix, and Apple does this too, a hybrid, where it has one solid-state drive, smaller because they're expensive, and one spinning drive, and then they're combined. And data that gets read and written to a lot, they move to the solid state drive. And your data, for instance, your document file, my documents, can stay on the spinning drive. It does make a huge difference in performance, though. It's remarkable. And boot time, you know, boot time alone. Remember, we were getting to the point with PCs that would take minutes from the point of where they were turned off to the point where they were usable. Minutes. It was just out of control. Well, SSDs now, it's seconds once again. And we're going to give you a link. Creamy Corn Cob in our chat room has posted a link to Alan's article from PC Perspective that describes this. He is at, Alan Melvantano is at PCPer.com. He is my personal drive guru. Thanks for asking. It's an interesting question. I personally don't think you need to. I wouldn't. I never do. But that's the tip. That's the tip if you feel like it's getting slow. Anna. Oh, no, it's not Anna yet. Coming up next, Anna. It's Andrew in Manchester, New Hampshire. Sorry, Andrew. I didn't mean to skip over you.
No problem, Leo.
What can I do for you?
I've been looking into getting a receiver, but I haven't really asked a whole lot of questions yet. I was wondering why you would want to get a receiver in the first place. I'm not a huge home theater geek. Yeah. I'm a geek about other things, just not home theater.
Yeah. So you have a TV. And if you're watching a nice HD TV, you really don't want to use the TV's built-in speakers. They put those in there more as a convenience than anything else. They're tinny. They don't have great bass. And more importantly, they don't fill the room. So you've got a great picture, but you've got a kind of tinny sound. That's not ideal. If you care about this, you want to take the next step and improve the quality of your sound. And that usually means getting more speakers, a subwoofer, left and right, center channel. That's really important. That's, you know, most DVDs, Blu-rays, even streaming these days use Dolby Sound, 5.1 sound, with a center channel. That's where the voice channel is. And it makes it a lot easier to understand the movie. That's how it is in the theater. You also, if you can, you want surround speakers. That's how it is in the theater. So the whole room is filled with appropriate sound. It's a much more vivid experience. And an AV receiver will help you do this. The other thing an AV receiver does that is very handy, if you have more than one device going to your TV, typically my AV receiver, for instance, I use a Denon, has seven inputs. So my Roku, my Apple TV, my cable box, my Blu-ray player, my PlayStation, all can plug into the back, and then one output that goes to the TV. So it's, in effect, an HDMI switcher. But it's also smart enough to say, oh, I see you're using a Sony. I can do the Sony 5.1 surround. Or I see you're playing a Blu-ray. I'm going to put that in 7.1 surround. Smart enough to understand the various encodings of sound coming from the various devices. And you can run those surround sound speakers. Now, if you don't want to do that, frankly, just getting a left and right, you know, powered stereo speakers will improve your TV sound amazingly. You can also get a sound bar that simulates surround, not perfectly, but it's better than the built-in speakers. So those are the reasons.
Right now is the sound bar.
Yeah, you know, you can. They still have these things that are home theater in a box. It's basically a Blu-ray player with a mini receiver and the speakers you need for a few hundred bucks, and that kind of solves the problem for most people. But if you really, you know, you want the best home theater experience, it's not horribly expensive, and it really does improve it to get. I recommend Denon, D-E-N-O-N. Get a Denon AV receiver and inexpensive 5.1 speakers, a subwoofer, center, left, right, and surrounds. Scott Wilkinson was always beating up on me because I only had stereo. He said, you got to get surround, and he's right. It does sound a lot better. You were right as usual, Scott. 8888-ASK. Leo, we're going to take a break for your local news at the top of the hour. We will be right back with more of your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smartwatches, Microsoft, Apple, IBM. IBM? No. Not really. They're not a tech company anymore. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm sorry, IBM. Just teasing. Pulling your leg a little. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, use Skype to call us, and I'd love to talk to you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Anna on the line from Long Beach. Hi, Anna. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. My name's actually Honor, but...
Honor! I like it better. Honor. Oh.
Hi.
You know, if I were from Rhode Island, I might call you Anna.
Well, there you go.
Anna.
It is Honor.
H-O-N-O-R?
Correct.
I love that. What can I do for you, Honor?
Well, I've got a problem. I'm trying to send a bunch of emails, and I have my website through GoDaddy, and I have mail through Outlook 365. And I thought I could send a lot. I sent 10,000 today or yesterday, and apparently that's the limit. And I'm trying to find some kind of carrier.
They're saying you're a spammer. That's why.
Well, no, actually, I'm running for state senate.
No, I understand that you're legitimate. But anytime anybody sends out a bunch of emails, they go, "Wow, you're spamming." So if you do legitimately want to send out a lot of emails, you need to use a service that's designed for that. And there's
and that's
some
what I'm trying to find.
Yeah, there's some very good services. MailChimp is one.
I went there, and it appears that I can only send to 25. They've got different plans, but I didn't see any that could send the number of emails that I want to send in the next 9 days.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time left.
No, and right now I'm trying to send like 200,000 emails.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They didn't seem to have a plan, and I was on the phone with GoDaddy last night for, at midnight for an hour, and they suggested MailChimp or Constant Contact.
Yeah, that's the
neither
other
of them seemed like they had a plan that could do as many as I want to do without costing a gazillion dollars.
Well, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Yeah,
I'm like just a regular person. I'm not a politician, so my campaign fund is kind of
good for you though. You're a citizen candidate. I like that. What district are you running in?
It's California Senate District 33. It's Long Beach, Lakewood, Southgate, Paramount, Bell Gardens.
Well, I would vote for you just on this basis alone. But I'm not in your district, unfortunately.
No, you're not. I'm just trying to get my,
you have to get your name out, because what happens is people get the ballot and they know the name of the incumbent. So the incumbent always gets reelected.
Yeah, and a lot of people that know, I won't get into politics, but people that know my incumbent don't like him.
Right.
Why I'm running.
Incumbents rarely get thrown out of office, and it's purely name recognition. So
yeah,
I am sympathetic.
My name, Honor, people are going to,
maybe that'll help.
Out at least.
Yeah. Check out this Honor person.
Name.
She sounds honorable.
Exactly. but I'm just... I was just really surprised. I've not done this before, and I thought that I was going to be able to send the emails I needed to send. So besides MailChimp and Constant Contact, is there any?
There are others. I bet you they're all going to be similar because they're all aware of one another. Try SendGrid.
Okay.
And let me ask the chat room. If there is kind of something a little more open source, the issue is cost, right? You can send out as many as you want, but you have to pay for it. And
yeah,
it gets to be like a penny.
For 50,000 in a month, it would be like another $1,000.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even get me close to how many I want to send.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's not because it costs them that much. It's because they've got you.
Right.
Because there's no other way to do it. But it's a good thing because spam is a big problem. And so most email servers like Office 365 really will, you know, as you start sending in a lot of emails, say, hey, hold on. Whoa, slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know of any way to do 200,000 emails without spending thousands of dollars. I really don't. That's why people go out and they raise money, right? It's not cheap to run for office.
No, and it's not easy to raise money if you're an unknown. I mean,
I know, I understand. I'm very sympathetic.
He's got $1.3 million.
Right.
I raised about $15,000.
He's the incumbent.
So,
he can do favors for people and get money.
Exactly.
And that's why I really think we need a better way of doing this.
Yes, yes, we do. We do.
But for the time being, I think you're gonna have to spend some send some money. Or you could send it to somebody in the chat room said, here's what you do. You send it to 1,000 people and ask them to forward it to 20 of their best friends.
Well, yeah.
You could do a chain.
That's an idea.
A chain letter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I presume you have a website, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can I give that to you?
Yeah, sure.
It's honorrobson.com.
honorrobson.com. Sure, I probably now am in trouble with the FCC for allowing political, I don't know. Do I have to get your opponent on? I don't know if there's equal time anymore. But
I can tell you who my opponent is. That would be equal time, right?
No, I don't think so.
Know?
I think I'd have to know. If I knew, then I'd have to give him equal time. So I don't know what the rules are anymore. It's all changed. I'm sure I'll hear from the boss any minute now.
I didn't want to get you in trouble.
No, you didn't get me in trouble. And I think that this is a very reasonable question. And I think I don't know what your politics are. I'm not supporting you for office because I'm not in your neck of the woods. But and I don't know what your policies are. But I do support the idea of citizens getting in there and running for office. I think that's great. So there's a slider at SendGrid, 200,000 emails, $100 a month. Sounds like a better deal.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
Check out SendGrid. It sounds like you'd have to sign up for a monthly thing, but check it out.
Right.
Check it out.
I will check it out. Thank you so much.
Good
really
luck, Honor. And I think
thank you.
I love it that people stand up and say, hey, you know what? I want to run for office because I want to serve. I think I could do a better job than the person in office right now. And you need the equal time. I think that that's great.
And California needs people in Senate as opposed to career politicians. That's just
sounds good to me.
All right. Well, thank you.
Good luck, Honor.
Thank you.
All right. I appreciate it. It's not whether I agree with her politics or any office officials' politics. It's really about giving more people more voice and giving them a chance to run. And it's expensive. But I guess it's not as expensive if you shop around for your email provider. Sounds like SendGrid is a really good solution. And they say, by the way, if you're sending more than 1.5 million emails a month, the premier plan has special pricing. But they've got a little slider on here. And it looks like it's certainly more affordable than MailChimp or Constant Contact, which are the big guys in this business. You understand the issue. I mean, really, spam is, you know, a big problem. And the truth is you send out 200,000 emails, most of them will be blocked by people's spam filters anyway, right? Won't they? And yet I hear from a lot of people email is the last effective way, at least in business, to reach out to people. So I don't know what the answer is. We're going to take a break. We have to take a break and run many campaign ads probably in your neck of the woods. this will be over. Our long national nightmare is soon to be over. We will have more of your calls and no more politics when we return. 8888-ASK-LEO. And the website is techguylabs.com. No politicking going on there, I promise you. However, if you have a thought for Honor or anybody listening, you can go to that site and add your comments. It's free and easy, and no sign-up required. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, techguylabs.com. I don't think equal time is in effect anymore. I don't think the FCC dropped the equal time. I have no guidance from any of my the only station that would care is KFI, of course, because they're in the that's the district. And I didn't let her talk about her policies or anything. You think I'm okay? It's not like she got to make a statement or anything. U.S. radio and television broadcast stations will provide an equivalent opportunity to any opposing political candidates who request it. So if you are running against Honor, if you're running in the district, you may call in and ask me how to send out email, and I will tell you. At the same price. Free. The airing was within a documentary bona fide news interview scheduled newscast or on the spot. Oh, see, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply because this is a newscast in effect. Debates are not subject to that rule. Cognitoil, check it out. That's cool. That's a great idea. Kids front end to Watson. What? What an interesting product. Say hello to the educational toy dinosaur. Hello, Cognitoy.
If we were asking the dinosaur questions, what would we ask?
Looks like Barney.
You want to ask them one. What would your question be?
My name is Amy.
Hi, there.
Oh my God.
What would you name a dinosaur?
Sparky.
Sparky? Your name is Sparky.
Okay, you may call me Sparky.
Could you spell space?
Space is spelled S-P-A-C-E.
I don't like its voice at all.
You are cute.
Thank you. You are making me blush.
Let's play a game.
Let's play Find the Red Stone.
You are sounding like Yoda. Sound like Yoda, you do.
Sound like Super Dave. Dinosaur smokes. Chain smoker. Leo Laporte. Do, 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 do. The Tech Guy 8888. Ask Leo. Gordon in Glendora. Leo Laporte here. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Leo.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, I got a Samsung question, or I guess more of a comment, or get your opinion here.
Yeah.
I 6 months ago, I bought a S7 Edge with a carrier, and I've been real happy with it.
Yeah, it's a great phone. I really like it. That's why I was a little disappointed the Note 7 blew up, because it was kind of like a bigger S7.
One of my coworkers got a Note, and he's, as you know, has problems.
Yeah, well, I hope he turns it in because, you know, I just flew on Delta, and every time you get on a plane, they say, if you've got a Note 7, report it immediately. I mean, they're acting like it's thermite, you know? You've got some horrible thing in your pocket.
Right. So anyway, I have that was my personal phone I was speaking of, this S7.
Yep.
I bought another one from work purposes with a different carrier.
Yeah.
I only had it 2 days, and all of a sudden it developed pink lines up and down on the right side of the screen.
Mm.
So I went back to that carrier, and they gave me another phone, and the pink lines were gone, so I was happy. Now my other phone is doing the pink lines.
Oh, no. Now, is it on the edge where the edge screen is? Because, you know, it has this little part of the screen where you can have edge stuff.
No, it's on the, for the most part, I would have to say desktop. I don't know how to say it.
Oh, it's in the middle.
Well, off center to the right.
But it's not all the way on the edge part. And I'm sure most people know with the edge phones, you can have a separate little portion of the screen dedicated to things like the time, the weather, you know, who called and stuff. But it's not just there. It's deeper into the screen itself.
Yeah, I mean, with the edge closed, you know, the edge screen closed, it's just on your, and I can't, lack of a better word, your desktop.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. I know what you mean.
Okay.
So have you tried resetting the phone? That'd be the first thing, and the thing that the carrier will make you do usually.
I did all that, and luckily with the way we can set up our phones now, it's easy to restore.
Yeah, right. What I would do is reset and not restore right away, just to make sure it's not something you installed. See if it works okay. And then if you then say, okay, now restore my settings and my previous apps, and then it comes back, then you know maybe it's associated with something that you've got running on it.
Right.
But my first guess would be a hardware problem.
Right. Well, I started searching online, and I'm not the only one having this problem.
All right.
And they're
so both of those phones should be under warranty. Anything under a year should still be under warranty.
Right, but here's kind of where I'm going with this. I'm thinking Samsung's got another problem that they haven't announced to everybody.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, first of all, because it's not blowing a hole in your pocket, it's less of a crisis. But all phones have a little bit of a problem. Apple has a significant problem with what some Apple users are calling the touch disease on last year's iPhone, or maybe it was this 6. And what will happen eventually if they see this in enough phones is they'll issue a recall or a fix. And Samsung is a good company in that regard. I think if they see it in enough phones, they'll say, yeah, we have a problem. And it can happen. You know, you manufacture a phone, and nowadays these phones, I think this is what happened with the Note 7. It was too small the insides were too small for the size of the battery they put in, and it caused the battery to short out on many of these phones. And could be there's some kind of what I'd call a congenital defect, something they designed into the phone that doesn't wear well. But it hasn't happened to my Galaxy S7 Edge. Now, to be fair, I don't use it every day. It's just sitting on my desk, but it still looks okay. So I think if it becomes widespread, the tech press will pick it up and say there's a problem, just as they have with the iPhone and touch disease. So you may just have bad luck, in other words.
Well, I mean, it's two different carriers. It's definitely not a carrier problem. It's,
No. And I would guess that given that you've reset the phone, it's probably not a software issue. It's almost, you know, when you see lines in a screen, that's really often an indicator of a hardware issue.
Right, and they're pink for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Well, at this point, both phones need to be replaced, and Samsung should replace them. Your carrier should replace them, and Samsung replace them for your carrier. It's still under warranty. There's a 1-year warranty in California, so But I appreciate you letting me know. And if people are listening and say, "Oh yeah, that happened to my S7," maybe it's time to. The thing is, nowadays with the internet, as I was saying at the beginning of the show, these things don't go unnoticed. In fact, if anything, they get more noticed than they maybe ought to. Maybe, you know, if 0.1% of how many S7s did they sell? Probably 20 million, 30 million. If 0.1% had a problem, that's thousands of people, and you'd hear about it.
Right.
So I haven't heard anything yet, but I'll tell you what, keep listening. And at some point, Gordon, if, you know, the tech press starts to say, hey, there's a problem with these, then you'll have been vindicated.
I was hoping I wasn't the only one, but when I had two phones doing it, I'm thinking there's got to be a big problem going on that just nobody's been exposed to yet.
Yeah,
you know?
Or you just had bad luck. Now, Triple C in our it is known that there are some issues. Oh, wait a minute, here we go. S7 Edge, pink line down screen. I'm looking at the Samsung forums. A pink line popped up on the screen from top to bottom in the middle. The carrier's Verizon, and you know, I would do a Google on the pink line and S7, and you may find out there are more of these.
Well, I did. And one of the things people were saying on there was to shut off the display of the edge screen.
Yeah. Did that fix it?
No.
No. All right. So the
I even have the one phones even doing it intermittently. In other words, sometimes I'll go on there and I'll see the pink line. And other times they go on and it's not there.
So there is a line for hardware support for Samsung. I'll give you that phone number. It's 800-726-7864. And they're a good company. If there is, you know, the first instinct of most companies is to deny it and say, oh, it's just for you. But that's what Apple usually does for the first, you know, 100, 200, 300 people. But at some point, they go, oh, we got a problem. And they'll, Samsung, look, you saw how I thought well they handled the Note 7 issue with a few hiccups. But in general, they're taking them all back. Right. So I think if there is an issue like that, I think you could expect Samsung to take it seriously. So it is obviously happening because it's showing up in Google searches.
Right.
And that 800 number is for Samsung hardware technical support. If the guy on there goes, oh, yeah, we've heard of that, then you know it is something going on.
Right.
Yeah. But, I don't know what you do at that point except to get it, take it back and hope the next one doesn't have the problem. People are saying that they're seeing on their Google searches the S6 and the S7. Boy, you really hope Samsung is not starting to make, you know, bad phones, having manufacturing issues. There's such pressure to put so much capability in these small devices. You know, I think maybe we are starting to see some of these things pop up. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up with his gadget of the week. But first, Rod in Malibu. Hey, Rod.
Hey there.
Welcome. You
know, take my call. I got a very simple question, but I haven't been able to get this solved. I've got a Sanyo Sprint flip-top phone, one of those old-school jobs.
I remember. I had one. I love that phone. I remember that phone. Yeah.
Let me tell you why I love it. And I want to get a smartphone, but I can't find this feature. It's got an auto-answer feature on it.
Yeah.
And with this, I stick it in my pocket, I leave it on, somebody calls, rings twice, I talk to them, and hang up. I don't ever touch the phone. I've been looking for a smartphone. I can't find this feature. Leo, is it out there somewhere?
Oh, yeah, every Android phone will do that.
Really?
Yeah, it's deep, very deep in the settings. In fact, when you go to the phone store, the person may not be enough of an expert to be able to tell you. But almost, in fact, I've seen a great many phones that will auto-answer, but you might have to look in... For instance, on an iPhone, which also does it, you have to look in the accessibility section,
okay.
Because it's considered an aid to people who have limited mobility or a limited ability to answer the phone. So
that's me.
Yeah, or you just don't want to. Is it good enough?
I'm working outside. I don't want to take my glasses off, scan the phone, and do all that.
Right. Let me see here. I'm going to look on the. Pretty sure it's an accessibility, but let me look here real quickly before I say for sure.
You know, I've talked to people in the store.
Yeah, they often don't know, do they?
They don't know. They say it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That's why I had to go to the one man who knew everything.
You see? You see? I'm just looking for... You know, a lot of them, some phones you do touch it, you raise it, and it will answer. I think most Android phones have at least that capability. What you want is auto answer on two rings, right?
Correct. Exactly.
I'm looking through. I have in front of me kind of the definitive phones, the iPhone 7 Plus and the Google Pixel. These are the two phones from Apple and Google that are kind of, you know, the definitive. Power button ends call. We don't want that. I want auto answer. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. I'm sure I see that every time I look through these accessibility settings.
It's important to me because I'd like to get a smartphone, but I can't find that feature.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck with this.
Yeah. Well, you think a smartphone would be smart enough to
I think so.
Answer after two rings.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, it's funny because I see this and I go, well, who would want that? Now I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Rod. It's the Rod feature.
I don't know why more people want it because it's so handy.
Well, I think the reason people don't normally want it is because they're afraid that they'll be doing something and the phone will ring and they won't hear it and it'll answer and suddenly you're talking to somebody.
That is a potential. But you know what? I can live with it because I like the feature so much. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you what, I'm going to have to go through the... I am sure I've seen this. And the question is where in the settings you see this auto answer feature. I know... You know what? Take a look at... Maybe it's a Samsung thing. But I know I've seen it in more than a few phones. And people at home are going, oh, Leo, you just go here and you just do that and it'll automatically answer. And the question is, it's some setting somewhere and I'm not sure... There's no Apple setting that does that. Slow-mo says, no, Apple doesn't do that. I'll tell you what. Let me keep looking because we're going to find this for you, Rod.
You're my man, I'll tell you. Because the thing is, it's not easy to find even on the Sanyo. But I did find it
right years
ago. And so I know it's not easy to find, but hopefully it's there somewhere because I'd really like to move up to a smartphone.
Ah, now somebody's telling me, and I think this is true, if you pair a Bluetooth headset or attach a headset, it'll show up in that setting. So, and I guess the idea is that's to prevent it from answering when it's in your pocket.
Right.
Without your knowledge, right? I didn't hear a ring and it just answered. But if you have a headset on, the presumption is, well, you're ready to take a call. Would that be sufficient for you?
It would help. But the thing is, I'm outside. I wear helmets and I wear all that stuff. And so that's why I never went to a Bluetooth earpiece because I couldn't really deal with all the stuff I had in my head. So
I'm going to have to keep looking for this. I know I've seen it, and I'm just looking through all of these settings. And, you know, of course, modern smartphones have 800 settings, and I just don't see where I could turn that on. So I'm going to keep looking. I'm pretty sure I've seen that, though.
And I hate to take up your time because there are people out there with very important problems. This probably isn't important to them, but it's important to me because I want to move up to a smartphone.
I think it's a good question. Yeah. I think it's a good question. And I'm waiting for the chat room to come up with an answer for me because they're good at this stuff. They go, there's somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people at any time in our chat room, and you can ask them pretty much any question. And there's always one guy, different guy each time. Will go, oh yeah, well I know what you do. You just and I'm just looking where it would be, and I don't know where it would be on here. But I feel like I've seen that so many times, and always because I know because I've always wondered, well, who would want that?
Well, you're talking to him.
Rod.
Yeah.
It's the Rod feature.
Yeah. I tell you, it's just so handy for me. I love it.
And we want to get you on a smartphone, Rod. It's really time.
Oh, I know. I need to move up in the world.
It's really, really time. Let me just see if I search for auto answer.
And I even tried to go with a smartphone and this phone, but you can't have two phones with the same number. And so that didn't work. And so... Yeah. Yeah. It's been a hassle.
All right. Keep listening. If I can find it for you, Rod, we'll let you know.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the help. Appreciate it. Bye.
Of course. This is a good question. We're going to go down the road a piece, down the PCH, just a few steps, and say hi to your neighbor, Kevin, also in Malibu. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Kevin.
So, Leo, I got this brand new Roku, and it's fantastic.
Oh, I just got it. I haven't set it up yet. This is the new Roku that supports 4K and Ultra HD.
Right. And I'm watching you right now, looking good. But here's my question, Leo, is to watch the Twit, there's three different streams. There's FlowSoft, Ustream, BitGravity. Which is the best? What's the difference?
It depends on the day. So we're going to actually discontinue the FlowSoft stream, I think, in the next few months, only because we got it because you needed a way to do it on iPhone. They don't support Flash, and the other guys were all Flash. But everybody now is moving away from Flash, so we don't need the FlowSoft anymore. Ustream should give you a pretty good result, but I think on the Roku, if you're trying to watch Twit, and there is a Twit app on the Roku, and you can choose the source, I think BitGravity High probably is the highest quality.
BitGravity.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. Chat room, has that kind of been your experience as well? And so tell me about this new Roku, because it was what, 130?
I got the Roku Express Plus.
Oh, okay.
Which will allow me to take our old big 47-inch TV that only has RCA plugs and turn it into a smart TV.
Yeah, the one I got is HDMI only because it's UHD.
Right.
Yeah.
So for $30 to take this TV,
$30
to loan to get rid of it.
Holy cow.
I'm watching you. It's fantastic. Oh,
I know. It's really is. It's great. We are big fans, and they just released new players. But the Roku Express is the lowest price Roku they've ever made.
Right. So Roku Express Plus, for all your listeners out there with that kind of analog problem with those old TVs.
Love it.
Yeah. Now, is there Roku station channel that's really good I don't know about yet? I've only had this for a couple days.
You know, there are literally thousands. There's many that are not publicized. So you have the Roku store there, which basically is lists of the most popular channels. But there are literally thousands if you know the magic thing, right?
I got that. I know that magic.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. So there
but
used
you,
to
Leo,
be...
I'm asking you, Leo.
What my favorite is?
Yeah.
I'm boring. I use Netflix, HBO Go, Showtime. I'm boring. I don't have any magic. There used to be a great channel, third-party channel site for Roku. I think it went down. I'm going to see if I can find it for you. That lists them all. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Select settings, others, auto answer. What phone is that? Select. What phone is that, though?
No, installing home.
Is that the Sanyo? We don't need the Sanyo. He knows the Sanyo.
Makes a lot of people think twice, but you need to
BitTorrent is another way to watch us. Yeah, we're on BitTorrent. Is that better quality? Actually, this would be a fun thing, right? Sometime to have. What's your favorite Roku channel? Auto answer apps. Ah, okay, there you go. So user 5127 has a link which we'll put in the show notes at techguylabs.com for apps that will do it. And iMore, how to set default call answer mode on the iPhone. Android LG smartphone settings, call, incoming call selection, auto answer. So that's an LG. I'm looking on the Pixel, though, of course, because that's the pure Android. It might be something that companies add. I'm searching for auto answer, and I don't see it. So, always wondered who'd want that. Yeah, there's no auto answer in the default Android settings, so this must be something that people add. Of course, you can add it with an app. Yeah, I can't click links in the chat room because I don't have actually the chat room running. I can only, it's read only for me at this point. So, hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Very well. How are you, my friend?
I'm good too, thank you. I have a slight cold, but I'm okay.
I hear a little bit of a cold.
Actually, I'm trying to reduce my
voice. No, CJ, he's not. He has it on his Samsung. He can't buy a smartphone unless he can find that feature on the smartphone. Sorry, Dick. I had to.
Oh, no. I was saying I'm standing in a bucket of water so my voice can sound more authoritative.
Yes.
Like you.
Yes. I was listening to an interview with Leonard Cohen, whose voice got very deep, deeper and deeper. Oh. And Terry Gross asked him, what happened? He said, well, 1,000 cigarettes and a million bottles of whiskey later.
Oh. Mm. No, I think feed in a bucket of ice water is an easy way
really?
To do
it. Really? Does that work? Yeah. I have to try that.
Well, that's what I'm trying.
My feet are cold, but my voice is warm.
It's deep, yeah. I don't know if you were an old Sid Caesar fan when you were a kid.
I love it. Well, he was Buzz before my time, but when I was a kid, okay. Came out with that movie, 10 from your show of shows.
Yes.
And that introduced me to Sid Caesar, and I've since, of course, become a massive fan and watched many of the old shows and stuff. He's just incredible.
They did the thing where he was a silent star, and then when sound came in, he had a voice like
that. Yeah, right. I remember that.
Right. And the only way to let him make movies was to keep him sick. Not dying, just sick.
Yeah, I was actually scared myself because I went to this. We flew out to Gainesville yesterday. We were in Gainesville for the IT Pro TV's grand opening party, and I danced quite a bit.
Oh my goodness!
It was a really fun party. And
how come there's no video of that?
There probably is somewhere. Anyway, I after we got off the dance floor, I know no sound was coming out of my voice.
Oh my god!
I was like, oh, I'm in trouble. Fortunately, I came back. Thank you.
Good.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time as always, round about this time for Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, and our Gizwiz. Dick is a fan of the gadget, and he brings us one each and every week. What I love about Dick is he doesn't go for the obvious. You know, all I do is the obvious gadget, you know, the new iPhone or the Apple Watch or something. But no, you like to dig deeper and find something really different.
Yes. Well, this is going to be a little different for Logitech. Now, I know that for years, maybe you still do recommend Logitech webcams.
Love
them. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So about a month or 5 weeks ago, there was a Pepcom event and Logitech was there. And I said, you know what? The C920 has been out for 5 years? And there's nothing new.
Yeah.
And they said, wait a minute. You must have ESP. Wait 4 weeks. And so now they have a new webcam out.
Oh,
so
good.
Okay, it's called the 922 Pro Streaming Webcam.
Oh.
So now that so many people stream the games that they're playing,
yes,
it can do two things. 1080p at 30 frames.
Okay.
Or 720p at 60 frames. So that
For high frame rate,
For high frame rate,
yeah.
They also include some free. It's kind of funny. It didn't work for me, but they include some. It's software that tries to act like a green screen.
Okay,
but the thing is, you have to be sitting in a neutral background. And my background, you know, my office is just full of stuff. But if you sit kind of still and have one neutral color behind you, it does a pretty good job of isolating your face over your game or whatever you're want to put on the screen. And the neat thing is, it's still the same price as the old one. I assume the old one's going to drop in price. The old one was about $100. The new one is about $100, and the new one is called the C922. And for some strange reason, it's sold two ways. On Amazon, it's the 922X.
Oh.
And it comes with 6 months of free XSplit software.
Oh.
If you buy it at Best Buy, you get 3 months of XSplit software and a little tripod.
But because the 922, I'm looking at Samsung's site, has been out of stock for a while. This is the X Pro Stream.
There it is. Yes. On Belkin, I think it says out of stock because I think they just don't have enough of them yet to start shipping.
It's too new. It's too new.
It came out about 3 weeks ago.
All right. Looks like the old Logitech, though. I mean, similar.
It does, right. The only thing they changed was that now there's a tripod mount if you want to use
that.
That's
actually a good idea.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It still has dual mics, but you know, if you want to do anything professional, you're going to want a separate mic.
Right.
But certainly the mic in this webcam is better than the one that is in your laptop or computer. And the software is kind of fun. With me, it didn't work because my background is just too crazy busy.
Yeah, I don't think green screen works with Disneyland behind it.
Yes,
it's a little bit too much there. Yeah,
too much.
Yeah,
too much.
I can see why they want the green screen, though. If you're a Let's Play gamer, you would videotape your game stream, you would record your face, and then you would maybe put the game stream behind you. A lot of people want to do that. They're kind of in the game.
Exactly, you know? Yes. Yeah. And with the XSplit software, you can actually do that. I did download the XSplit, and that's kind of fun.
How do you spell XSplit?
Just X and then split.
XSplit. Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Right.
And when you do that, you get two things. You get presentation software and you get gaming software.
I thought maybe Logitech had given up on this because every computer now comes with a camera, right?
Yes.
So yes, the aftermarket isn't huge on these things.
Well, now, I guess they figure every 4 years they could do it.
If you want someone with a big aftermarket, that's this guy right here. He's huge. All you have to do is go to if you want to see his aftermarket, go to gizwiz.biz, and that's Dick's site, GIZWIZ dot B-I-Z. And you can see notes from this show, so you can see more information about all the products he mentions here, but also his regular appearances on ABC's World News Now and other shows which shall remain nameless. And you can play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And all you have to do is identify this gadget, a close-up of a gadget. Actually, you only have, what, two more days
Days. Yeah. Halloween night, it ends.
Yeah. So get on over there. You can win an autographed copy of the Mad Magazine from December 2016 with Alfred E. Newman in a straitjacket. He's as dressed as Uncle Sam in a straitjacket on the cover, their annual politics issue.
Yes.
And but you know what? If you miss the deadline, there's another one. It'll be starting November 1st.
Boy, you're right on top of things.
I figured it out. You have a strategy. There is a pattern to your madness.
Yes, there is.
Also a great podcast, gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. I'll see you next week.
See you next week. Back to the phones we go. I think this will be our last call of the day. Rowan in Reseda, California. Hi, Rohan.
Hey, Leo. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for calling.
I'm a long-time listener. Anyway, my question is, like, I store a lot of data in the flash drives, and now, like, I'm thinking, you know, I used to do that in the floppy disk. Floppy disks are obsolete now.
Right. And then it was zip disks. They're obsolete now. And then it was optical discs, and they're obsolete. Tape, remember tape backup? It's not obsolete, but if you don't have the player, you're out of luck. So you're wondering if USB thumb drives are obsolete?
Yeah.
I think they're going to be around as long as USB is around. And USB has some life left in it, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It's not like the discs and all. It's been
well, this is, you know, data. So it's an interesting question. And the answer really is there's no format that's going to last forever, right? But
that is correct.
And if you, what you do is you keep an eye on it and you continually move to the new thing. I don't think it's time to abandon USB yet. In fact, Apple and Microsoft both have released products now that support the newest USB, the USB 3.1, with the Type-C connector. And that means you'll have to get an adapter for your thumb drive, but that's fine. That works just fine. I've used them.
Mm-hmm.
So your data is still around. The real issue, once you get to things like thumb drives and hard drives, you know, of course, you have to have an interface, but the issue will become the format that it's stored in. So if you use a backup program, for instance, and that backup program disappears, goes out of business, well, it doesn't matter if you can read the drive if you can't open the backup. So that's why when I use a backup drive, I almost always just copy the files over, you know, instead of using some sort of specialized backup. If you are going to use a specialized backup, use one that's open source and widely in use, something like TAR, for instance. TAR or rsync. These are open source programs designed to make collections into files. A lot of Unix users use TAR. Getting a tarball, as they call it, it's like a zip file. Problem with zip, you know, remember before there was zip, there was ARC. Yeah, remember ARC? Good luck if you have a backup in the ARC file format. And before ARC, there were other zip formats before zip became commonplace. So
I also keep something in the cloud.
That's the best way. I would have something local on a hard drive, something on the cloud, and then just refresh it regularly to make sure you can still read it and that the format is still viable. But USB thumb drives, I think they're fine still. I really do. Hey, it's great to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you next time. Have a great geek week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, signing out. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.